Ruego tomar asiento, por favor.
Please take your seats.
Se declara abierta.
The eighth meeting of the ninth session of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues is called to order. Distinguished members of the forum, this morning the Permanent Forum will take up item 6 of its agenda, entitled Comprehensive Dialogue with 6 United Nations Agencies and Funds. The forum will hold a dialogue with the Secretariat of the Convention on Biological Diversity and also will take up the report of the annual session of the Interagency Support Group on Indigenous Issues. I will invite Mr. Scott, the focal point for non-governmental organizations of the Secretariat of the Convention on Biological Diversity, to introduce the report of the CBD Secretariat. After the presentation, forum members, delegations of the observers, organizations of Indigenous peoples, and other participants who wish to ask questions will be given that opportunity. Mr. John Scott will respond to the questions and will make comments. Also under item 6, the Permanent Forum will hear a statement from Ms. Yamina Jagda, the Deputy Director of the UN Habitat New York Office, who will present the annual report of the Interagency Support Group on Indigenous Issues. I now invite Mr. John Scott and Ms. Jagda to join me on the podium. You're already here. Welcome to you. First, I give the floor to Mr. John Scott, the focal point for non-governmental organizations of the Secretariat of the Convention on Biological Diversity. You have the floor, Mr. Scott.
Hello. It's working. Good morning, everyone. It gives me great pleasure to address you this morning, and I have a short statement before our question and answer period. Something more than 500 Indigenous and local community organisations participate in the work of the CBD. At the governing body, we usually get between 500 and 700 Indigenous peoples attending. We call the governing body the COP, the Conference of the Parties. The COP often attracts between 5,000 and 6,000 people, and the governing body will be convened this October in Nagoya in Japan. At the working groups, and in particular the Working Group on Traditional Knowledge, we have between 50 to 200 Indigenous organisations participating out of a total of between 500 and 600 participants. The CBD, the Convention on Biodiversity, is the only multilateral environmental agreement which has a voluntary fund for Indigenous participation. And the information on the voluntary fund and application forms are available through the convention's webpage in the 6 languages of the United Nations. The voluntary fund has a selection committee, an Indigenous selection committee made up of 7 people, 7 Indigenous peoples from the 7 regions recognised by the Permanent Forum. We prioritise the selection of Indigenous women and youth in the voluntary fund. The Convention on Biodiversity is an almost universal instrument to which 193 nations now adhere. It has 3 objectives: the conservation of biological diversity, plants and animals, including microbes, the sustainable use of its components, and the fair and equitable sharing of benefits arising from the use of genetic resources. We call this process dealing with genetic resources and associated traditional knowledge ABS. This is the acronym. As you know, in the UN, we have a special language all of our own. Spanning the thematic work programs of the CBD are cross-cutting issues of traditional knowledge and access and benefit sharing. So traditional knowledge is taken into account across all the work areas of the CBD. The international community has recognised the close and traditional dependence of many Indigenous and local communities on biological resources, and most notably in the very preamble of the convention itself. There is also broad recognition of the contribution that traditional knowledge can make to both the conservation and sustainable use of biological diversity, two fundamental objectives of the convention. The Conference of the Parties has established a working group specifically to address the implementation of Article 8J, which calls on member states to respect, promote, and preserve traditional knowledge, but it can only be promoted with the approval of the knowledge holders. The ad hoc open-ended intersessional working group on Article 8J, which is the working group that deals with traditional knowledge, is responsible for the development and implementation of an extensive work program with the full participation of Indigenous and local communities. The working group on Article 8J is open to all parties, and Indigenous and local communities play a full and active role in its work. The working group includes enhanced participation mechanisms for Indigenous and local communities, including the nomination of an Indigenous co-chairperson to assist the chairperson of the meeting, as well as an Indigenous and local community bureau referred to as the Friends of the Chair, and co-chairs for any sub-working groups or contact groups that may be established to deal with difficult issues. So Indigenous and local communities enjoy enhanced opportunities to make interventions on all the agenda items during our meeting. Our last meeting was the sixth meeting of the Working Group on Article 8J, which met last November in Montreal. The traditional knowledge is considered a cross-cutting issue that affects many aspects of biodiversity. It is taken into account and addressed by the Conference of the Parties and by the working groups, as well as by Article 8J. I would also like to point out that many years ago, 7 years ago, there was a recommendation from the Permanent Forum asking us to develop a code of ethics to protect Indigenous intellectual property and cultural heritage, and that code has been finalised and will be adopted at COP10 in October this year. So it takes us a long time, but I hope that it's a good product that is useful and that it's fully implemented. I also should say we have many Indigenous partners, many NGO partners, and later this morning Conservation International will present an intervention. We are working with Conservation International. They have an initiative to set up an Indigenous youth fellowship program inside the organisation, and we are looking to support them in that process. And Kristen Walker will elaborate on that a little bit later this morning. At that, I'm going to stop now so we can have a real dialogue. I would like to think this morning we can have an open dialogue and talk to each other. And I know that the members have some questions, and I'm eager to start our dialogue. So thank you very much, everyone.
Doy las gracias al señor Scott por su
I thank Mr. Scott for his statement. I now open the floor for questions and comments from the members of the Permanent Forum, delegations of the observers, IPOs, and other participants. Any questions?
Victoria Tauli, por favor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much, John Scott, for the presentation you made and also for the report that you gave to the Permanent Forum, which is contained in the document number, I'll just check, E/C19/2010/3. This is the report that you gave to us to report on what you have achieved in terms of the recommendations that the Permanent Forum has put before you in the last session. One of the concerns, we are very much concerned about the progress on the issue related to the negotiations on access and benefit sharing. As you will know, in the report, page 15 of your report to the ninth session, you mentioned, and I quote, the Secretariat of the CBD in partnership with the government of Germany through the German Agency for Technical Cooperation is pursuing an access and benefit sharing capacity building in the African region, and indigenous and local communities representatives are regularly included in these workshops and in the regional capacity building workshops on protected areas. So I have two questions related to this whole issue of access and benefit sharing. My first question is, I've been following very closely the progress of the negotiations in the development of an international regime on access and benefit sharing of genetic resources. I have met with some of the colleagues, the indigenous representatives who have been actively participating in the processes up till Cali, the meeting that was held in Cali. And the sense that I got from them is that there is not much progress in those negotiations in relation to the parties integrating the need to really fully recognize in traditional knowledge of indigenous peoples, as well as integrating the need to recognize the rights of indigenous peoples, their free, prior, and informed consent when access is being done on their genetic resources. And I'm very worried about this because if the protocol is going to be adopted in Nagoya at the Conference of Parties, the 10th Conference of Parties, I think it's going to be dangerous if there's a protocol that will come out that will not explicitly say that they are recognizing the rights of indigenous peoples as contained in the declaration and the rights of indigenous peoples to have their free, prior, and informed consent obtained before any access to their genetic resources is ensured, no? So it's done. So I think I would like to know exactly the, at least from your point of view as the Secretariat, what are going to be the ways that can be done in terms of ensuring that this comes in, and what role can the forum play along those lines. And of course, in relation to this capacity building activities that is being done in Africa, I would like to know what are these capacity building activities and what are the lessons that you have learned in doing this, and whether you have really built the capacity of indigenous peoples of Africa to influence the African governments and the other governments. I know that the African governments are sympathetic to indigenous peoples' issue, but the main sticking issue is the fact that parties are still insisting that national sovereignty over genetic resources is the primary principle that should rule this kind of protocol. And indigenous peoples have strongly been protesting against it, saying that they also have permanent sovereignty over their natural resources. No? So I think that's the issue that has to be addressed, and I would like to get your views on this. Related to this is, of course, the interventions that indigenous peoples are doing on the working group on access and benefit sharing. Wherein I know that the government of Spain has also provided resources for long-term capacity building. No, but I think that will be pursued further by my colleague in ELISA. But those are my main concern. Really, is the access and benefit sharing negotiations and what can be done to really not lose all the gains that we have achieved in terms of ensuring that parties who are also the same parties who adopted the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples are saying a totally different thing in that whole process. Thank you very much.
Gracias, señora Tauli. Ahora vamos a dar paso a la intervención de nuestra colega Margaret Lokawa. Margaret tiene la palabra.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'm happy to take the floor this morning, and I appreciate the speech given by our panelists this morning from the Secretariat of Convention on Biological Diversity. We know that the current phenomena today is climate change that has affected many indigenous peoples, and it's really so interesting that some of these issues are being handled by your department concerning the issue of capacity building that my colleague has just raised. The other one I wanted to raise is the issue of indigenous peoples attending to these meetings. You know, that is one of the challenges indigenous people face to get into these very important meetings. And I'm just wondering how effective distribution your department has done, especially to ensure that indigenous people from different regions attend these meetings. And it would be very interesting and very important also to know the effectiveness of the capacity building that you've just mentioned on the side of African, indigenous peoples, to what degree it has reached to this moment. Thank you very much.
Gracias, señora Lokawa. Tiene la palabra señor Scott.
Thank you. Firstly, I want to introduce my colleague Florina Lopez, who is an indigenous Kuna woman from Panama, and she is also the chair of the Indigenous Women's Biodiversity Network for Latin America. And we have an MOU with Florina to do extensive sub-regional workshops in Latin America. When the opportunity arises, I will let her give you the details of what the work we're doing in Latin America. What you might find interesting is we've been able to pursue the strategy of capacity building in Latin America because the government of Spain has been a patron for work in Latin America. And so it often depends on finding somebody. We work with voluntary donations. So for us to do work in a region or a country, we will need to find donors to assist us. And it's been very successful in Spain, with Spain as a patron, and our work in Latin America, I think, should be showcased. And in a little while, Florina will take the floor on that. Firstly, I'm going to take the questions just two at a time because these are extremely complicated matters when we're talking about international negotiations and then regional capacity building strategies. So firstly, I would like to respond to some of Vicky Tully Corpus's questions about ABS. ABS is the acronym we use. The long phrase is access to genetic resources and associated traditional knowledge and the equitable sharing of benefits arising from their utilization. So we sum that long sentence up by saying ABS. The ABS negotiations have been going on for 7 or 8 years now, and this year they are reaching ahead. We just had what was supposedly our final meeting, the 9th meeting of the Working Group on ABS in Colombia, in Cali, and I was there 2 weeks before I came here to New York. The negotiations, I actually think that they were going quite well when we were in contact groups, but in the final 3 days, it became apparent that not everybody at the table was prepared to negotiate, and therefore the meeting, the parties decided to reconvene the meeting in July of this year. I've just received the dates. I don't have them in front of me. I only received them last night. Unfortunately, the dates will be exactly the same dates as the expert mechanism meeting in Geneva. But the 9th meeting of the Working Group on ABS will resume in Montreal in mid-July. And that information I only received last night. If I could talk a little bit about the negotiations. Okay. Sorry, I'm just consulting my notes. Article 8J requires that parties respect, preserve, and promote traditional knowledge with the approval of the knowledge holders. The parties, although there seems to be some agreement on the term of prior and informed consent, there is not universal consensus among the parties on whether approval, which is already required under Article 8J, is interpreted as PIC or not. And this is yet to be resolved. As you know, the 193 parties to the convention make decisions by consensus. And just as the members, the 16 members of the Permanent Forum, make decisions by consensus, and you can understand how difficult that process is. You can imagine how difficult a process is to get 193 governments to agree on something, anything almost. But I'd like to talk about the details of ABS. Just one moment. Okay. Of course, the Indigenous peoples at the convention work through an Indigenous caucus called the International Indigenous Forum on Biodiversity. It uses an acronym IIFFB. ILCs also participate on government delegations, and the IIFB remains open to them also. The parties at the moment remain open to Indigenous positions on traditional knowledge, and some regional groups share similar positions to Indigenous peoples on issues such as traditional knowledge. There are alliances between regional groups of governments and Indigenous peoples on issues that they agree on. And the issue of prior and informed consent, for instance, is largely supported by the African region, very strongly supported by the African region at this time. Now, most disagreement or divergence within the negotiations arise from the diverse ways that governments approach ABS and traditional knowledge issues. Some governments want to be involved in detail. For instance, in the African region, some governments have expressed concern that Indigenous and local communities may not have sufficient capacity to negotiate ABS agreements, including minimal standards of benefit sharing. Therefore, they seek to play a very active role in protecting the interests of Indigenous and local communities to ensure that benefits are equitably are received and equitably distributed. The African region would also support the government ticking off that prior and informed consent was achieved in accessing traditional knowledge. And this view is also shared in some parts by Asian and Latin American governments and by a group we call the mega diverse countries. On the other hand, some developed world countries take a different view and they approach ABS in a different way. Some consider traditional knowledge is solely under the authority of Indigenous peoples, and therefore they would consider it inappropriate to get involved at all, including in confirming if PIC had been obtained when traditional knowledge is accessed, or in establishing modalities for minimal standards of benefit sharing. They just feel that they should not have a role in this whatsoever. So some of the developed world governments have stated that it is not appropriate for governments to get involved in arrangements between users of traditional knowledge and the holders of those that traditional knowledge. Now, unfortunately, ultimately, the negotiations have to seek a middle ground, as the final protocol must be adopted by consensus of 193 member states. So one of the problems are, of course, Indigenous peoples ourselves are extremely diverse. Our customary laws are extremely diverse. The situations we live under are extremely diverse. And we have to find an arrangement that will accommodate that full diversity. There's an ongoing discussion, of course, about the issue of genetic resources. At this time, I think governments themselves are also progressing their understanding of what sovereignty means. And sovereignty, of course, provides legitimate governments with the authority to administer their resources. Of course, we're also familiar that under human rights law, resources are actually owned by peoples with an S. So government sovereignty can sit with this without any conflict. It depends on how this is interpreted. some of the indigenous peoples following the CBD, and particularly some of the indigenous lawyers, have actually suggested to me that it would not be a concern if the CBD was silent on the ownership of genetic resources, and that this issue was resolved in a different forum, a more appropriate forum, such as a human rights forum. And they have reminded me something that I've learned within the UN system, that also being silent on something can be very powerful in international law. Maybe that at least in part answers the questions, but the fact that the working group did not arrive at a consensus in March when it met, and it met for, we're in Cali for almost 3 weeks. The very first meeting we arranged was an Indigenous negotiators meeting to prepare Indigenous peoples for the negotiation. But the governments themselves have still not arrived at consensus, and they need to reconvene to continue what is a very difficult and intense negotiation again in July in Montreal, with the view of adopting a legally enforceable protocol in Nagoya. I don't think people should be overly pessimistic, because already the fact that the governments have moved to a position that they want a legally binding protocol is a significant step forward, and they have also agreed to work on the basis of a chair's text, which still contains a lot of very useful elements for Indigenous peoples. So the game is not over yet. We are in a very difficult negotiation, and Indigenous peoples continue to work because you work very closely, Vicky, with many of the Indigenous peoples involved in this process. People work very long hours at these meetings, and they continue to push the issues, which are still contained in the draft chair's text. That is the current that parties have agreed will be the text that they negotiate on. One of the problems Indigenous peoples face now is the game has changed, and we've moved away from general positions, and people must negotiate pieces of text. And of course, after the meeting hours, we do not have the 6 UN language interpretation, so a lot of Indigenous peoples, especially our brothers and sisters in Latin America, North Africa, French-speaking Africa, are very challenged when the contact groups are all conducted in English. But this is the usual UN practice when negotiations continue beyond the usual meeting hours. But I think, for instance, there's also a discussion at the moment within the negotiation text. There is recognition of Indigenous peoples' rights. And Indigenous peoples themselves who participate in the CBD are also having a discussion whether adding the declaration would make any difference right now. The main thing is that it respects Indigenous rights, and that really means that it must pay attention to the declaration. So even Indigenous peoples themselves are now wondering whether they should simply fight to maintain the phrase that recognises Indigenous peoples' rights, or whether they should continue to advocate for the inclusion of a reference to the declaration in the preamble. So it's a difficult negotiation. We're at the stage where we're negotiating phrases and words, and it remains a difficult negotiation, especially for Indigenous peoples and especially for those who do not work in English. Now, I'm quite welcome to come back to any further questions on ABS, because it's a critical issue for Indigenous peoples, and this is the critical moment. Also, as Vicky pointed out, this is the first piece of international law that has been negotiated since the adoption of the declaration in September 2007. So this really matters to Indigenous peoples. What comes out of this protocol will show you whether the adoption of the declaration is being taken into account in the development of international law. This is the first piece of international law developed since the adoption of the declaration. And I think the Indigenous peoples' eyes from all over the world are focused on this process. Now I'd like to leave the ABS and talk a little bit about what Margaret kindly brought up, our distinguished representative from Africa at the forum, about capacity building in Africa. As I mentioned before with Latin America, being able to do regional capacity building strategies will often depend on finding a patron. Now, fortunately, in Africa, there is an ABS initiative on capacity development for Africa. It's not aimed specifically at indigenous and local communities, but they are invited to all of the meetings. The ABS initiative on capacity building for Africa is a multi-donor initiative funded by Germany, the Netherlands, Norway, Denmark, La Francophonie, and implemented by the German Development Agency, GTZ, and the Secretariat of the Convention on Biodiversity is a partner in this initiative. Now, the initiative has organized a long list of workshops over the last few years, and the CPD is an active participant in those as a presenter and in helping to organize them. But we do not lead this. It's led by GTZ, and we are their partner. Some of the workshops carried out in recent months are the 4th Pan-African ABS Capacity Building Workshop in December 2009, the ABS Capacity Building Workshop for Eastern and Southern Africa, hosted by the Institute for Biodiversity Conservation in September 2009 at the Institute of Biodiversity in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, and the African Indigenous and Local Community Preparatory Meeting on ABS and TK in Nairobi, September 2009. The preparatory meeting was held with a view of strengthening the voice of African Indigenous peoples and local communities in the international arena to provide a forum for open exchange and discussion amongst Indigenous representatives from all over Africa on relevant topics under the Convention. And the full details of all of these workshops and workshops going back a number of years are available at a webpage. I'll give this to you in writing, Margaret, but the webpage is www.abs-africa.info. And I'll write that down and make it available to you. Thank you.
Gracias, señor Scott. Hemos previsto un activo diálogo entre los delegados y la Secretaría de Diversidad Biológica, por lo que voy a solicitar nos compadezcamos del uso del tiempo, porque si no vamos a quedar con una lista larga de oradores que no van a poder hacer uso de la palabra. Enseguida damos la palabra a la señora Elisa Kanki. Por favor, Elisa.
I will give the floor to my colleagues who are present in the permanent forum session, so I will not ask any kind of question. Thank you.
Entonces damos inicio a la lista de oradores. Vamos a administrar el tiempo con la máquina que tenemos acá. Y además invitamos a que formulen preguntas al señor Scott. La primera persona de nuestra lista de oradores es el señor Yangaruchi Adisep del Caucus de Rusia. Señor Adisep, tiene la palabra. ¿Está presente en la sala, señor Adisep? Tiene la palabra.
Как хорошо, что мне слово представили. Здравствуйте, уважаемый форум, уважаемые участники постоянного форума. Я представляю Ногайский народ Российской Федерации, Аджиев Янгурчи. Моя организация называется Региональная общественная организация «Бирлик Ногайского народа».
Очки забыл.
Ногайцы в Республике Дагестан искусственно лишены конституционных своих прав. И по отношению к ногайскому народу продолжается политика геноцида, только физический террор, кадровые и другие проекты насильственное переселение из мест исторического проживания сменились на экономические и территориальные. Согласно указу Президиума Верховного Совета РСФСР номер 721/4 от 9 января 1957 года были искусственно проведены границы между отдельными частями Ногайской территории. Без осознанного согласия коренных жителей Ногайской степи просьба Дагестанского обкома была удовлетворена, и при упразднении Грозненской области районы с ногайским населением Караногайский, Кизлярский, Крайновский, Тарумовский и город Кизляр были переданы Дагестану. Народ был расчленен и потерял свое единство. Территориальный передел 1957 года не оставил в дальнейшем никакой возможности для ногайской автономии в составе тогдашнего союзного государства. Руководители Республики Дагестан планомерно внедряли в жизнь долгосрочный план ликвидации ногайских населенных пунктов и закрепления их территорий за хозяйствами горных районов. История с ногайскими землями, как и в 20-50-х годах, происшедшая в 1957 году прошлого века, вновь повторяется, только в более изощренной и циничной форме, прикрытой официальной глазурью цивилизованности. Идет завуалированное закрепление за хозяйством отгонного животноводства этнических земель ногайцев. Из года в год принимаются все более дискриминационные законы относительно ногайского народа. Для завершения бесконечной политики...
Por favor, no tenemos... Pedimos solucionar el problema de la traducción. ¿Hay traducción? Ya.
Создание национальной...
Se escucha la traducción en... Ya. Muchas gracias. Muchas gracias.
Создание национального территориального образования является формой осуществления ногайским народом права на самоопределение, основной целью которого является объединение районов компактного проживания ногайцев в одном государственном образовании и предоставление ногайцам самоуправляемой национальной автономии Ногайской степи в составе Российской Федерации. В результате проводимой властями Дагестана и высокопоставленными чиновниками на протяжении последних 86 лет бесконечной политики по переселению горцев на равнину и завершении стадии ползучей колонизации аннексии земель ногайцы лишились необходимого земельного резерва для собственного этнического воспроизводства. Бесспорно, наличие весьма серьезных проблем, остроту которых следует снять в скорейшем времени. Это, как отмечалось, проблемы имущественного социального расслоения, безработицы, неудовлетворенности в сфере национальной культуры. Очевидно, это, что время диктует необходимость обратить внимание на эти проблемы сейчас, так как углубление процесса обострения межэтнических, социально-экономических, национальных и культурных проблем ногайцы может привести к серьезным деформациям в их общественном развитии и будущем. Мы просим постоянный форум обратить серьезное внимание на весьма острую межэтническую ситуацию на всей области расселения ногайцев. Мы просим постоянный форум рассмотреть вопрос направления специального докладчика на Ногайскую степь для изучения наболевших проблем ногайского народа на Северном Кавказе Российской Федерации. Спасибо за внимание. Да? Ты меня фотографировал, да?
Я. Muchas gracias. Otra vez les hago recuerdo que el tema de diálogo es con la Secretaría de Diversidad Biológica. Entonces invito a los señores observadores que están en la lista de oradores a hacer las preguntas sobre la exposición del señor John Scott y no hacer intervenciones generales ni intervenciones que tienen que ver con temas que ya pasamos. Damos la palabra al señor Les Malecé del Caucus del Pacífico. Señor Malecé, tiene la palabra. ¿Está señor Malecé?
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Thank you. Mr. Chairperson, I do have questions to ask of Mr. Scott. First off, we'd like to thank very much Mr. Scott for his work in the CBD Secretariat, which has assisted our delegations at the CBD meetings. However, we note that his position, as we understand, is related to Article 8J, and we have the question, should the Secretariat have a more substantial unit which is addressing the rights of Indigenous peoples as right holders with the self-determination, control of our lands, territories and resources, and inseparable ties to biodiversity? So should, in fact, the CBD Secretariat be strengthening the support that is being given to our delegations? I have a few questions here. Secondly, what events are being organised this year for Indigenous peoples to celebrate the International Year of Biodiversity at the international level? The next question is, how will Indigenous peoples be assisted to hold a meaningful display and presence at the COP10 meeting in Nagoya in Japan? Can Indigenous peoples in the Pacific region who face critical changes to marine and terrestrial environments which affect our very existence be assisted by the parties to meet and organise as Indigenous peoples? The next question is, can states, particularly Australia and New Zealand, contribute more to the voluntary fund to ensure that Indigenous peoples in the Pacific can have greater representation across a range of CBD meetings? At the moment, there are very few representatives at very few meetings because of the limitations. The next question is, are the parties to the CBD opposed to reference to us as Indigenous peoples, as was acknowledged in the declaration adopted by the General Assembly in 2007, and will they be insisting on referring to us only as Indigenous and local communities, which is an inferior status? The next question is the CBD Secretariat continuing to take account of the recommendations which came from the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues in 2007 and contained in the report of the International Expert Group meeting on the International Regime on Access and Benefit Sharing and Indigenous Peoples' Human Rights under the CBD? And the final question, Mr. Chairperson, the report by the CBD from the meeting of the International Indigenous and Local Community Consultation on Access and Benefit Sharing and Development of an International Regime, which is a report to ABS 5 called Information 9. It was provided as an information paper to the working group, but the Permanent Forum had requested that the recommendations be considered by the working group. And is that possible, that to get the working group to actually consider the human rights issues that are raised in the reports that I've mentioned? Mr. Chairman, I'll end there, but I will say we have a prepared statement which we'll hand in, and we have five recommendations for the Permanent Forum under the CBD heading. Thank you very much.
Gracias, señor Malecet. El siguiente orador de nuestra lista es el señor Albert de Terville, del Caucus del Caribe. Ruego al señor de Terville hacer las preguntas sobre el tema que nos ocupa.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Since this is the first time I'm intervening and it would be the last time for this session, let me just report to the Permanent Forum on activities taking place within the CARICOM region, the CARICOM Caribbean region, the 14 countries of CARICOM, with regard to the presentation made by Mr. Scott. We wish to inform the Permanent Forum that at this present time, the World Intellectual Property Organization and the governments of CARICOM engaged in an activity in CARICOM for the 14 countries, independent states of CARICOM. The establishment of a regional law for the protection of traditional knowledge, traditional cultural expressions, and genetic resources. being part one of the experts on the working group advising the governments of CARICOM and also representing the interests of indigenous and local communities, we have held seven national consultations in seven countries of CARICOM. The law, regional law for the 14 countries may come into being in the next 2 years. It would implicate the Article HJ as well as the ABS protocol on the Convention on Biological Diversity. I wish to ask Mr. Scott that when the law, the regional law, comes into being, how would the Convention on Biological Diversity interact in providing advice to the governments of CARICOM and indigenous peoples and local communities within that region? I wish to also inform the permanent forum, since I didn't have the time to do so. This is the third attempt to speak to the forum. To inform the forum that the government of St. Lucia has engaged in a number of activities with indigenous peoples. And that relates to, one, inviting indigenous peoples to submit a chapter in the new constitution in St. Lucia. We were asked to do so, and we recommended that the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples be included as part of the new constitution of St. Lucia. Let me also inform the permanent forum that we were among the first to translate the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples in our own indigenous language, and that is part of the Secretariat documents, and it's on the website. So I wish to thank you, sir, Mr. Chair, for giving me this opportunity to inform the permanent forum of what is taking place within the CARICOM, 14 countries of CARICOM, as it relates to Article 38 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples that encourages collaboration between indigenous peoples and states in the implementation of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. So I would expect that Mr. Scott would respond to the question that I asked in relation to the regional law for the protection of genetic resources, traditional knowledge, and traditional cultural expressions of indigenous peoples and local communities in the Caribbean region, as opposed to the ABS protocol and the Convention on Biological Diversity. Thank you very much, sir.
Gracias, señor de Terville. La señora Florina López complementará la exposición hecha por el señor Scott. Señora López, tiene usted la palabra.
Ya, muchas gracias. Muy buenos días a todos y a todas. Sí, para complementar un poco lo que acá el señor Johnny Scott ha hablado sobre el fomento de capacidades que se está dando a nivel de la región de América Latina. Justamente tomando en cuenta las decisiones emanadas dentro de las reuniones de la COP, en la cual uno de ellos es el fomento de capacidades para los pueblos indígenas y comunidades locales. Y gracias también al apoyo generoso del gobierno español, la Red de Mujeres Indígenas sobre Biodiversidad ha estado haciendo algunas actividades en base a un convenio que firmamos el año pasado en París, paralelo a la reunión del Grupo de Trabajo sobre ABS, la octava reunión que se hizo en París. Nosotras, la Red de Mujeres, hemos iniciado este proceso, aunque anteriormente también, con el mismo apoyo del gobierno español, hemos hecho algunos talleres regionales sobre el tema del convenio de la diversidad biológica. Esto con el objetivo de que los pueblos indígenas y las comunidades locales puedan tener una mayor participación en este proceso tan complicado, tan difícil, dentro de un sistema que muchas veces no entendemos, en la cual los pueblos indígenas tenemos que estar presentes. Como lo decía bien claro Johnny Scott, muchas veces al callar estamos otorgando. Y eso es verdad, porque de alguna manera nosotros como pueblos indígenas tenemos que estar incidiendo dentro de ese proceso, y en la cual actualmente, sobre el tema del régimen internacional sobre acceso a recursos genéticos, estamos en una negociación muy crítica en la cual los pueblos indígenas tenemos que estar capacitados, estar en la igualdad de condiciones en las mesas de discusión y de negociación. Por eso, esta red de mujeres indígenas que se creó durante la cuarta conferencia de las partes en Bratislava ha tenido este proceso de ir poco a poco capacitando, fortaleciendo la capacidad de las mujeres indígenas, sobre todo, también de acuerdo a algunos avances que hemos tenido dentro del mismo proceso del Convenio de la Diversidad Biológica como mujeres, en la cual también se aprobó durante la COP9, se adoptó el Plan de Acción de Género, en la cual la Red de Mujeres también estuvo participando para su elaboración. Y como objetivo, bueno, de este convenio que firmamos, uno, está el fortalecer la capacidad de las mujeres indígenas en todo el proceso de discusión, en la toma de decisiones sobre el tema del convenio de la diversidad biológica, porque hemos visto que en estas reuniones en las cuales las mujeres indígenas hemos estado participando, muchas veces llegamos sin tener idea de qué se está tratando, de qué temas se está hablando. Y por eso los estados muchas veces se aprovechan de esta, quizás podríamos decir, debilidad de no conocer de fondo cómo es el sistema de las Naciones Unidas, sobre todo sobre el tema del convenio de la diversidad biológica, cómo se participa, qué temas se están discutiendo. Y justamente para nosotros, los pueblos indígenas, tanto mujeres y hombres, en este convenio el tema que nos importa quizás de manera primordial es el tema del conocimiento tradicional, en la cual se está hablando en el artículo 8J, y también saber que los derechos humanos de los pueblos indígenas tienen que estar también involucrados y tener que los estados, hacer entender a los estados que el tema de los derechos humanos de los pueblos indígenas no es independiente del tema que se está discutiendo dentro del convenio de la diversidad biológica, que es un tema transversal en todo el sentido de la palabra. Así que nosotras como Red de Mujeres estamos llevando estos talleres ya en febrero del año 2010, este año justamente el primer taller subregional se realizó en Argentina para 4 países, principalmente Paraguay, Uruguay, Argentina y Chile. También el segundo taller que se realizó fue en marzo 2010 también en Guatemala para la región de Mesoamérica. También se está organizando el tercer taller que va a ser en Brasil, Brasilia, en el mes de junio, los primeros días. Ya se abrió la convocatoria. Esta convocatoria es abierta para todos los pueblos indígenas, sean hombres, sean mujeres, jóvenes, adultos. Así que esta convocatoria es para los países de Amazonía. También está el otro taller que se realizará, que es para la región de los Andes, que va a ser en el mes de julio. Los primeros días, estamos viendo ahora las fechas por la reunión que se realizará en Montreal del 12 al 18 sobre la 10ª reunión del grupo de trabajo sobre ABS, que quizás podamos también las fechas, cambiar un poco las fechas de ese taller subregional para los Andes. Y sobre todo también se realizará un taller latinoamericano que reunirá a todos estos talleres subregionales que hemos venido dando, los resultados, cuáles son los avances que hemos tenido sobre este fomento de capacidades para los pueblos indígenas y comunidades locales. En este caso, el taller latinoamericano se realizará en el mes de agosto en Panamá, en la cual participarán, no van a ser todos los que estén participando en las subregionales, porque justamente también estamos viendo de que los recursos no son tan grandes. Quisiéramos que muchos participaran y muchas participaran en estos talleres subregionales, pero también por la limitación de los recursos también tenemos que disminuir la participación muchas veces de los hermanos y hermanas en este proceso, porque para nosotros es sumamente importante que cada día las mujeres, sobre todo las jóvenes, estén participando en este proceso y puedan incidir no solo a nivel del convenio, sino a nivel de su país, a nivel nacional, porque todo lo que las decisiones que se implementen o que se tomen dentro de este proceso van a llegar a hacer leyes nacionales dentro de nuestros países. Entonces, ¿cómo nosotros y nosotras podemos incidir en este proceso, en la toma de decisiones, sobre todo y a nivel local? Porque justamente para la toma de decisiones, nuestras autoridades, las que toman decisiones, las mujeres y hombres, tenemos que tener esta herramienta como un para aprovechar esta herramienta para tomar una decisión clara de lo que queremos que se implemente o no se implemente dentro de nuestras tierras y territorios. Y por eso estos talleres se están realizando y es un convenio por 3 años. Va a depender ahora de este año cómo los resultados se den. Y para nosotras es un avance muy grande saber que podemos contar con un apoyo así en este proceso, porque muchas veces, como le decía, le vuelvo y recalco, de que muchas veces llegamos a estos espacios sin entender a qué venimos, de qué estamos hablando, con una idea equivocada de las cuestiones, porque estos espacios son, podríamos decir, de negociaciones en todo el sentido de la palabra, porque está en juego nuestro futuro, nuestros recursos, nuestra biodiversidad, nuestra cultura. Está todo lo que es nuestra vida, nuestras formas propias de vida. Y este es un legado que tenemos que dejar a nuestras futuras generaciones. Y entonces, para eso tenemos que tener bien claras las posiciones que vamos a tomar. ¿Cómo vamos a incidir? Si debemos o no debemos estar participando en este proceso. Y muchas veces pensamos que sí, porque con o sin nosotros muchas veces los estados están tomando decisiones. Muchas veces no, prácticamente casi el 100%. Así que por eso es necesario que cada día sepamos, manejemos, entendamos cuál es este proceso, este sistema en el cual estamos inmersos también, porque es necesario, porque es una obligación nuestra y un deber como pueblos indígenas estar incidiendo de alguna manera para que se escuchen nuestras propuestas, para que las propuestas que demos también sean de calidad. Entonces, este proceso de capacitación, fomento de capacidades, para nosotros es un logro que hemos tenido como Red de Mujeres y esperamos seguir avanzando. Es un proceso difícil, un proceso largo, lo entendemos así también, que de noche a la mañana no podemos tener el 100% de éxito, pero pensamos que tomando en cuenta también el apoyo de otras instituciones, de otras organizaciones, de que de algún modo también están dando su granito de arena, podemos llegar a tener más avance, mayor capacidad, porque capacidad tenemos, solo que tenemos que desarrollarla y entender estas herramientas tan difíciles para nosotros, estas herramientas e instrumentos internacionales que tenemos en nuestras manos. Así que le agradezco muchísimo aquí a la Secretaría por todo el apoyo que nos ha dado en este proceso y que esperamos seguir contando con ese apoyo y con los estados que también deben apoyar en recursos, porque es un mandato de la misma conferencia de las partes. Así que cualquier pregunta que quieran hacer, estamos dispuestos a contestar acá. Muchas gracias.
Mucho gusto.
López. Nuestra próxima oradora de la lista. Vamos a pedir al señor Scott que haga sus respuestas y le rogamos ser generoso con el tiempo porque tenemos una larguísima lista de oradores indígenas que quieren hacerle preguntas, señor Scott.
Thank you. I'd like to thank Florina especially. I think that the work being done in Latin America is a model for other regions, and we're looking for patrons from donor states so that we can develop similar models in other regions to build capacity on the convention. Indigenous peoples like herself follow this particular issue sometimes their whole lives. It's a very complicated process, the CBD, and it takes a lot of commitment, and I really applaud Florina's work as the coordinator of the Indigenous Women's Biodiversity Network for Latin America. I would like this to be conversational, and Mr. Melzer has kindly asked some questions, and I would encourage everybody to ask questions that can be responded to so we can have a dialogue and not simply a monologue this morning. And Mr. Melzer, I hope that I've captured most of the questions. I'll try and respond, and please remind me if I haven't. I do have two assistants at the CBD, which is recent. Until then, I was the sole person responsible for traditional knowledge at the CBD. So, of course, I applaud your efforts to have a substantial unit to deal with these issues. I certainly would support that recommendation. I think, you raise an interesting issue. We deal specifically with traditional knowledge, and this, in fact, is touches on a much larger parcel of issues for Indigenous peoples. But we do approach traditional knowledge from a holistic way. we use it as a cross-cutting issue to ensure Indigenous perspectives are embedded across all the thematic areas of the Convention, whether that's marine and coastal waters or inland waters or climate change or forests or any of the other programs of work. And I should remind you, of course, that the structure of the Secretariat itself is determined by the 193 governments that make up the Convention itself. And the structure was put into place when the Convention was first developed in the early 1990s. But I certainly am interested in your idea of giving me more resources. What events are being prepared for this year? We've already had a busy year, and of course recently we were in Kali and we had the opportunity to have a Indigenous negotiators meeting between the 13th and 15th of March to prepare people for the ABS negotiations. We also have some money remaining from that budget, and we will be working with the Indigenous representatives to look at bringing Indigenous negotiators together again to prepare for the resumed session of the working group on ABS, and I'll be talking to the Indigenous regional reps about that. Also between the 8th and 10th of June in Montreal, the CBD and UNESCO is a partner in the Global Conference on Biological and Cultural Diversity for Development, and Indigenous peoples are being invited to that. We have some money to assist Indigenous participation, and we're hoping that this meeting will send a draft decision to our governing body to develop a joint program of work between the Convention, UNESCO and NGO partners and Indigenous peoples organisations and other relevant organisations to do concrete work pursuing this connectivity between the different forms of diversity, biological and cultural diversity. Of course, we have our governing body meeting in Nagoya, Japan, and it usually attracts between 5,000 and 6,000 people. We often get between 500 and 700 Indigenous peoples participating in that meeting, and there will be an Indigenous program established that will run during the conference of the parties. That's all the events that we have planned for this year. Of course, our events also depend on attracting donor governments. Your suggestion that some donor states may like to contribute to our voluntary fund, I support your recommendation. It's difficult for us to support Indigenous participants from the developed world. We can usually only bring one or two people from a developed country because the money is focused on bringing people from the Indigenous peoples from the developing world. We can always do with more funding in the voluntary fund. I think the backbone of the CBD is the effective participation of Indigenous peoples, and we can only guarantee that if we have enough money to bring them to our meetings and, of course, as Florina said, to build their capacity so that they can effectively participate in our meetings. So I'll stop there, and I hope that we can continue on a question and answer format and make this a dialogue. Thank you.
Pedimos a la señora Victoria Tauli Corpus hacer sus observaciones.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I wanted to come back because there are some other questions that were prepared by the members of the forum, but which were not communicated earlier. So I'd just like to raise these three questions. One was the point of the secretary of the CBD report to the ninth session, where it said that the secretariat has noted that some permanent forum recommendations are directed to the conference of parties and some are directed to the secretariat. So on occasion, it is not clear to whom these are directed. So I would like to ask John Scott, what suggestions can you make to address this situation? The second question is, of course, the whole issue again of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. You mentioned earlier that there were some discussions whether the declaration should be brought into the ABS negotiations, etc. But I think that question is more general in terms of how do you look at the impact of the declaration on the rights of indigenous peoples in the activities and overall direction of the Secretariat of the CBD? Is it really influencing the activities and the programs and the technical cooperation activities that you are doing within the Secretariat? And finally, the whole issue of youth, the indigenous youth, how are you also ensuring that the perspectives of the indigenous youth are also incorporated into the work of the Secretariat? Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Gracias, señora Victoria Taoli. Señor Scott, ¿puede usted responder?
Thank you very much for those questions. Yes, the first question was about targeting recommendations that can be effectively implemented by the CBD. And sometimes it's not quite clear exactly who the recommendations are directed at. Of course, a deeper understanding of the structure of a treaty implementation body and the role of secretariats in these bodies always helps to craft technically accurate recommendations, and then we can respond to them and make sure we give you what you want. The interagency support group members are here at the Permanent Forum, amongst our many other duties, to provide technical advice to the Permanent Forum members to ensure that recommendations directed at specific agencies are doable and fall within our mandates. If we have recommendations that are not within our mandate, it's impossible for us to respond to those. But it needs to be recalled that political decisions are made by the parties or governments, and we have 193 of those, and specifically at the governing body we refer to as the COP, and political recommendations must be directed at the 193 governments who make the political decisions. The Secretariat is not a political body. We are simply there to fulfil the wishes of the parties. Working groups can make draft recommendations only, and then they send them to the conference of the parties for their consideration. And this brings up the point that Mr. Melzer raised earlier, that was about a report that could it be considered by the working group on ABS. The working group on HA considers all matters related to Indigenous and local communities, and they have to make recommendations to the governing body, and the governing body would then have to direct the working group on ABS. These processes take a minimal of 2 years to do this, because the working groups meet in between the governing body, and the governing body meets every 2 years. So it's important to be familiar with the processes. The Secretariat's work is of a technical nature, such as capacity building. The Secretariat, strictly speaking, is not an implementation body for the Convention. The Convention is implemented at the country level, and the Secretariat does not work at the country level. At the country level, national focal points are appointed by the government, and they are usually found within the departments of environment. Also, the Secretariat may only be able to implement decisions if funds are provided by member states. The implementation of many decisions for the Secretariat depends on voluntary donations from the member states. The Secretariat's chief job is to implement the decisions adopted through the consensus of the governing bodies, and hence Indigenous peoples must lobby the member states to ensure favourable and useful decisions are adopted. Of course, the member states have committed to the effective participation of Indigenous peoples, and this allows us to do a lot of work in that area. But the governments report on their responsibilities through their national reports every 4 years, and a summary of these is considered at the working group on HA when it meets every 2 years. Now, I'd like to provide a brief example of a recommendation that could have been more finely tuned. The Permanent Forum recommended in 2008 that the working group on access and benefit sharing recognise the rights of Indigenous peoples over biological and genetic resources of their own territories. In this particular case, the recommendation would need to be directed at the 193 member states of the governing body, which is the political arm of the convention. Now, of course, I like to be solutions-oriented, and to involve agencies in the crafting of recommendations to ensure they are implementable is always a good idea during the Permanent Forum, and this happens regularly with members. We work closely with the members here. and visits two agencies by permanent forum members of a capacity-building nature so that they learn firsthand about our mandate and the functions and structures also are very useful ways to operate. Of course, it's always a challenge to find resources, but I find it very useful when the members come to visit our agencies, and it's always a great pleasure to have you. The Permanent Forum has a very broad mandate, and it's impossible for individual members to be across everything. So further refining your portfolio system so that Permanent Forum members have a more focused area of particular interest to them and are not overburdened is strongly recommended by the Interagency Support Group. If I could move on to Vicky's second question about the impact of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Now, the Secretariat of the Convention serves the parties, but at the same time it's part of the UN system. As part of the UN system, we have a role in promoting human rights and social justice, but as much as we would like to, particularly on a personal level, we do not have an advocacy mandate. In the same way that the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights does, or that the Permanent Forum itself does. We are an independent facilitator of intergovernmental processes and negotiations, and in these processes we facilitate the effective participation of Indigenous peoples, but decisions regarding the recognition of their rights must be made by the member states of the Convention. Within the Secretariat, I play an active role in raising awareness of Indigenous issues and Indigenous rights, including the Declaration within the Secretariat, with my colleagues, and for the most part, they are very receptive to this. We're made up of about 80 people, and half of those are professional staff, and my colleagues are briefed regularly on Indigenous developments, including the Declaration, and are well aware of the Declaration. Article 8J is a cross-cutting issue. Requires that this is taken into account across all the other program areas dealt with by the Convention. Of course, the current ABS negotiations, which seek to adopt a legally binding protocol in October of this year, are of particular interest to Indigenous peoples. And as I mentioned before, it is the first international law being adopted since the adoption of the Declaration. And as I mentioned before, that even Indigenous peoples themselves are unsure how the Declaration should be mentioned in the preamble of a legally binding protocol. Certainly, there is a growing understanding that the sovereignty of the state is not absolute, and it does provide provide legitimate governments with the authority to administer their resources. We also have the added complexity that the CBD deals with Indigenous and local communities, and Indigenous peoples have developed a distinct identity in international law that local communities have not. However, we have targeted work coming up with local community representatives, and as we develop, as local communities are able to develop a distinct identity, this will give more strength to the argument of Indigenous peoples that the phrase Indigenous peoples and local communities should replace Indigenous and local communities. So I think that's a useful strategy. But quite frankly, local communities are about 30 or 40 years behind the Indigenous movement. Final question about Indigenous youth. I should say the Interagency Support Group, which I'm chairing this week in the absence of UN Habitat and UNEP because they were stranded in with the volcanic ash, we met with the Indigenous caucuses this morning and we're very pleased that the Indigenous Youth Caucus was there. And we've decided that it was such a useful meeting that we will institutionalise this and meet every year between the Indigenous caucuses and the agencies. And perhaps we could have a longer meeting during one of the closed sessions of the forum. And the Indigenous Youth Caucus have also requested a pre-sessional meeting next year, and the agencies are eager to receive their project proposal so we can look for funding and try and make that reality happen. But I should emphasise, with the voluntary fund for Indigenous participation, we prioritise Indigenous women and youth. In ABS, though, we have given preference to people who are following the process for a long time because the process is at the end of a highly technical legal negotiation. So it's a difficult process to bring new people into. But for our other meetings, we always bring in new people, and we prioritise women and we prioritise youth. In fact, something like 70 to 80% of our participants are Indigenous women, and I'm very pleased about that. Also, for the International Year on Biodiversity, which is this year, we have a special focus in developing community education and public awareness materials, including for Indigenous youth, and these include a short film that is being developed by Indigenous peoples in the South Pacific, an animation being worked on by Indigenous people in Canada, a participation guide which is being developed globally, and community radio stories which are being developed for people in the Amazon and the Andes. So we've got different products for different regions. It was hard to develop a product that could cover every region in the world given the diversity of Indigenous peoples. Thank you for those questions.
Gracias, señor. Invitamos a la señora Miriam Masakisa, asesora del Ministerio de Patrimonio Natural y Cultural del Ecuador. Señora Masakisa, tiene la palabra.
Buenos días, señor presidente. El gobierno del Ecuador, comprometido con la transformación de la visión de Estado liberal a una visión de Estado de derechos y justicia, viene desarrollando esfuerzos para asegurar que los pueblos y nacionalidades indígenas gocen del derecho a la libre determinación consagrados en los artículos 2 y 32 de la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. Además, la nueva Constitución de la República del Ecuador incorpora un cambio de gran trascendencia para la vida del país, pues pasa del Estado pluricultural y multiétnico de la Constitución de 1998 al Estado intercultural y plurinacional. De este modo, se recoge una de las reivindicaciones más profundas e importantes de los pueblos y nacionalidades indígenas y afroecuatorianos del país. Otro instrumento guía para la construcción del Estado constitucional de derechos plurinacional e intercultural, orientado hacia el buen vivir o suma causai, constituye el Plan Nacional Estratégico que propone una visión del buen vivir que amplía los derechos, libertades, oportunidades y potencialidades de los seres humanos, comunidades, pueblos y nacionalidades y que garantiza el reconocimiento de las diversidades para alcanzar un porvenir compartido. En este sentido, el Gobierno Nacional, a través del Ministerio Coordinador de Patrimonio, con la finalidad de viabilizar la puesta en práctica de los derechos reconocidos en la Constitución, el Plan Nacional y la Declaración sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, viene implementando el Programa Desarrollo y Diversidad Cultural, financiado por el Fondo para el Logro de los Objetivos de Desarrollo del Milenio, administrado por el Programa de las Naciones Unidas para el Desarrollo. Este programa articula el trabajo de 7 agencias del Sistema de Naciones Unidas y es coordinado por el Fondo de Población de Naciones Unidas. El programa tiene el alcance nacional y se asienta en las provincias de Chimborazo, Esmeraldas y Sucumbíos. Tiene un financiamiento de $5,500,000 para 3 años. El programa se concentra en 3 ejes: fortalecimiento de políticas públicas interculturales, el apoyo a iniciativas de revitalización cultural y productiva y la construcción de capacidades nacionales en la planificación nacional y local mediante la producción de información estadística sobre la diversidad cultural y étnica. El programa ha invertido en su primer año de ejecución la cifra de $1,400,000 destinada a la revalorización de la cultura, la inclusión, el diálogo intercultural y la erradicación de las brechas producidas por la exclusión en el ejercicio de los derechos de los pueblos y nacionalidades. Señor presidente, la Constitución del Ecuador, aprobada en el 2008, establece que el Ecuador es un Estado plurinacional e intercultural que reconoce y garantiza el derecho de las autoridades de las comunidades, pueblos y nacionalidades indígenas a ejercer funciones jurisdiccionales mediante la aplicación de normas y procedimientos propios. Al respecto, el Ministerio de Justicia y Derechos Humanos, el Ministerio Coordinador de Patrimonio con su programa Diversidad Cultural, en cooperación con la Oficina del Alto Comisionado para los Derechos Humanos, viene trabajando en un proyecto para la compatibilización de las justicias tanto indígena como ordinaria. Al finalizar mi intervención, deseo mencionar que en la reunión preparatoria para el noveno periodo de sesiones del Foro Permanente, el Gobierno Nacional ha recogido importantes recomendaciones emanadas de los pueblos y nacionalidades indígenas reunidas en Quito el 8 de abril de 2010, las mismas que hemos hecho nuestras. Recomendamos al Sistema de Naciones Unidas a acompañar al Gobierno del Ecuador en el proceso de información y reflexión con los pueblos y nacionalidades sobre el proceso de la décima reunión de la Conferencia de las Partes a realizarse en Nagoya, Japón, en octubre de 2010, que tratará las cuestiones de acceso a los recursos genéticos, la participación en los beneficios y los conocimientos ancestrales de los pueblos indígenas. Recomendamos al Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas y al Sistema de Naciones Unidas del Ecuador a coordinar esfuerzos con el Instituto para el Ecodesarrollo de la Región Amazónica Ecuatoriana, ECORAE, a fin de organizar una reunión de expertos en el 2011 en nuestro país con el tema La visión de los pueblos indígenas en el proceso de construcción de las circunscripciones territoriales indígenas. Recomendamos además que el Programa de Desarrollo y Diversidad Cultural, financiado por el Fondo para el Logro de los Objetivos de Desarrollo del Milenio, continúe con una segunda fase y amplíe su alcance en otras provincias de nuestro país. Finalmente, recomendamos al Grupo Técnico Interagencial sobre Interculturalidad del Ecuador a continuar con sus esfuerzos para el fortalecimiento de las capacidades para la implementación de políticas y estrategias para alcanzar el summa causa, así como también que continúen y fortalezcan el alineamiento a las nuevas políticas del gobierno ecuatoriano a favor de los pueblos y nacionalidades y el impulso de armonización y simplificación de los procedimientos administrativos en las agencias para apoyar de manera eficiente la implementación de estas nuevas políticas. Muchas gracias.
Gracias a usted. La próxima oradora es la señora Kaia Bue, de la Unión Internacional para la Conservación de la Naturaleza. Señora Bue, tiene la palabra.
Chairman, Mr. Chairman, IUCN, the International Union for Conservation of Nature, enthusiastically joins the UN in celebrating the International Year of Biodiversity. Conserving biodiversity is central to our mission, and our mandate and activities are strongly linked to the Convention on Biological Diversity. We actively support its parties, organs, and the Secretariat in their efforts to ensure that the appropriate decisions are made and that they are implemented as effectively as possible to achieve the CBD objectives. We congratulate the CBD for all the efforts it makes to advance conservation objectives in an inclusive manner and with particular attention to indigenous peoples and local communities. Just as we face cultural diversity loss due to economic and social changes, the world is continuing to lose its biodiversity at unprecedented rates, and urgent action is needed to ensure the resilience of people and nature. The IUCN Red List of Threatened Species is the most comprehensive and authoritative inventory of the global conservation status of plants and animal species. Many of the world's threatened species remain vital not only for ecosystems, but also for human livelihoods, particularly those of indigenous peoples who so greatly rely on land and natural resources, including plants and animals. IUCN has recently included a new module in its species technical assessment system, focusing on the livelihood and cultural values of species for indigenous peoples and local communities, so that we can also alert about the risks of species decline for the well-being of local people. IUCN recognizes that the traditional knowledge is extremely valuable for identifying, assessing, and monitoring species at risk, as well as for framing appropriate responses to species loss. It is therefore looking forward to further supporting implementation of the CBD in partnership with indigenous peoples who harbor a great reservoir of knowledge and experience about their environments and the species found within them. In line with several articles of the CBD, notably 8J, IUCN works hard to incorporate indigenous issues in all of its work. IUCN supports the CBD negotiations on access and benefit sharing, or ABS, and in particular provides advice to countries and communities on matters related to traditional knowledge associated with genetic resources. IUCN will continue to promote an ABS regime that fully responds to the Convention's objectives, including issues of legal certainty, compliance, and traditional knowledge associated with genetic and biological resources. IUCN is involved in many local capacity building projects throughout the world with the intention of strengthening indigenous and local community institutions to enable just, equitable, and sustainable natural resource governance. This work helps them voice their social, economic, and cultural rights and advocate against unsustainable developments that threaten biodiversity, ecosystems, and the cultures found within them. IUCN will continue to support research on local, social, and economic dynamics to better understand how to implement integrated conservation strategies for environmental and social well-being. Protected areas are one of the most important tools for biodiversity conservation under the CBD, and IUCN is a key partner in implementing the CBD program of work on protected areas. Many protected areas of the world, including marine areas, overlap with lands, territories, and resources of indigenous, traditional, and rural peoples. IUCN recognizes that governance, rights, and participation have historically been weak aspects of protected area management. IUCN will continue to work to ensure due recognition of the rights of indigenous peoples in existing protected areas and the protected areas which may affect indigenous peoples' lands, territories, natural and cultural resources are not established without indigenous peoples' free, prior, and informed consent. To this end, IUCN is actively developing new strategies and supporting new initiatives, such as the Conservation Initiative on Human Rights, created by 8 major international conservation organizations, which incorporate and engage with indigenous peoples to secure their rights and livelihoods. In the context of the CBD Program of Work on Protected Areas, IUCN is also working to promote approaches, tools, and measures to improve protected areas, governance, participation, equity, rights, and livelihoods. Understanding, monitoring, and supporting local participation, governance, livelihoods, and equity indicators place the users of biodiversity back in the equation of successful biodiversity stewardship inside and around protected areas. IUCN will also continue promoting the recognition, respect, and support of Indigenous and local communities' own conservation practices and initiatives, as well as the improvement of local governance systems that enable and support Indigenous peoples to conserve and manage their own environment based on their own rights and responsibilities. IUCN also works directly with the CBD and its gender plan of action to mainstream gender equality and equity in its program initiatives and secure gender-balanced access to resources, control of traditional knowledge, and participation in governance and decision-making. Indigenous women are key holders of knowledge and sustainable practices that IUCN continues to work, and IUCN continues to work towards incorporating their perspectives, needs, and rights into biodiversity and other conservation research and decision-making processes across the world. Mr. Chairman, IUCN reaffirms its commitment to continue working hard to safeguard and promote Indigenous people's rights and interests in its mission to conserve biodiversity and looks forward to further collaboration and partnership with CBD parties, organs, and secretariat, as well as with Indigenous people's organizations in this endeavor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Muchas gracias, señor, por el esfuerzo que usted hace en la interpretación. Damos la palabra al señor Jesús Lacerdas de UNICEF. Señor Lacerdas, tiene usted la palabra y ruego también ser generoso con el uso del mismo. Señor Lacerdas. No está en sala, ¿no?
Sabían dónde vive aquí.
No está el señor de UNICEF. Vamos a dar la palabra al señor Hiten Yumnam del Caucus del Asia. Señor Yumnam, por favor, puede usted hacer las preguntas.
I would like to speak on behalf of the Asian Caucus, and I would like to raise some questions with regard to the upcoming COP of CBD in Nagoya, and also on the implementation of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, and also on the implementation of integration of the recognition of the pre-prior informed consent, and also in other concerns. First, I would like to ask CBD as to what step has been taken up to ensure that the traditional knowledge is created as a cross-cutting team for the new CBD strategic plan and for the post 2010 biodiversity targets, and for the central role of the indigenous peoples, to ensure the central role of indigenous peoples in the implementation. Yeah, and because we also hope that there is a partnership to promote the communication, education, and public awareness programs on biological and cultural diversity just to be carried out with UN agencies, government, with a full participation of indigenous peoples. And I would like also to ask, it's already been addressed, but I would like to ask if what step has been taken to fully integrate the provisions of the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, alongside with the implementation of the new strategic plan, and in the post 2010 biodiversity targets, and also in the monitoring of the state of traditional knowledge and community well-being. Yeah, and I would like to ask the CBDs also to. What step has been taken up to strengthen the recognition and implementation of the pre-prior and informed consent of indigenous peoples in the activities of CBD? And also we hope that the proposed protocol on the access and benefit sharing must recognize the indigenous peoples' inherent right to our resources as outlined in the UN DRIP, Declaration of Indigenous Peoples, and to ensure respect for the indigenous people's governance system, our customary laws, institutions, and procedures at the local level. And also, I would like to ask CBD what steps have been taken up to develop a clear-cut indicators for assessing the full implementation of the recommendations of CBD for the protection of biodiversity in indigenous peoples' land and territories. Sir, we have raised several recommendations, and I'm going to submit it for your kind perusal. And I would like to also to recommend a couple of points. Like, we'd like to ask the parties to all CBD to stop all support of the agrofoil monoculture plantation, genetically modified organisms, construction of dams, mega dams, extractive industries, creation of protected areas, which has been carried out without the free, prior, informed consent of indigenous peoples, and also that destroy the biodiversity and source of the physical and spiritual survival of our peoples. And I would also like to urge upon the CBD to strengthen support for initiatives of indigenous peoples and local communities, including the greater allocation of finances in support of the community projects, and at the same time to ensure that safeguard be applied to ensure that funding by Global Environment Facility and large conservation NGOs do not bring negative impact on indigenous peoples. And we also urge to ask the use of the ACWECON guidelines in the conduct of the related socio-economic and cultural impact assessments, sir. I'm submitting the recommendations for your kind perusal again, sir. Thank you very much, sir.
Gracias, señor. Damos la palabra al señor Hindu Ibrahim del Caucus del África. Señor Ibrahim tiene la palabra. ¿Está, señor Ibrahim? ¿Puede levantar la mano? No está, ¿no? La próxima oradora en la lista es la señora Debra Harding, del Caucus Global. Señora Harding, tiene la palabra. ¿Está la señora Harding? Puede, ya. Tiene la palabra usted para hacer las preguntas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, colleagues. Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to present this statement on behalf of the Global Indigenous Caucus and our comments to the and we direct our comments to the permanent forum members and to the parties of the Convention of the Biological Diversity through the Secretariat. This intervention addresses the international regime on access and benefit sharing, currently being elaborated and negotiated under the auspices of the CBD. We were pleased to hear the Executive Secretary of the CBD acknowledge that Indigenous peoples are indeed owners of the land, which he said on the first day of the opening of this forum. Let me go first to our recommendations. First, that the UN, the Permanent Forum recommend that the CBD recognize the direct relevance of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples regarding any future international protocol on access and benefit sharing, and provide recognition of the rights of Indigenous peoples to protect the biological materials, genetic resources, and traditional knowledge originating from our lands and territories. We hope that the parties will do this by ensuring the following preambular text is included in the protocol. 1. Recognizing that the importance of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and the principles enshrined in it, including Indigenous free, prior, and informed consent, are included in the protocol. Also, to recognize that traditional knowledge and associated genetic resources are best protected in and through the exercise of the inherent rights of Indigenous peoples. We remind the parties of the Convention that, consistent with international human rights law, states have an obligation to recognize and protect the rights of Indigenous peoples, to control access to the genetic resources that originate in our lands and territories and waters. Such recognition must be a key element of the proposed international regime on access and benefit sharing. We recommend that the parties use the term Indigenous peoples and local communities, consistent with current international standards, and also that they include clear and explicit inclusion or reference to the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The Global Caucus wishes to express our concern that in the event that if the parties do not include specific reference to the rights of Indigenous peoples and express a willingness and commitment to protect our rights, that the Global Caucus must unequivocally reject the outcomes of the negotiated text of the International Protocol on Access and Benefit Sharing as not being sufficiently protective of the rights of Indigenous peoples. We ask that the Secretariat of the Convention transmit this communication to the parties as an information document, and I will submit the full text of our statement to the Secretariat. During this time, I would just like to highlight some of our key concerns. We know that this international regime creates a situation of conflicting sovereignties because states are asserting national sovereignty over genetic resources, but failing to recognize that Indigenous peoples also have permanent sovereignty over genetic resources, and that the states have been unwilling to recognize that in the text of their regime. This will create a situation that potentially may create the risk of further exploitation and theft of Indigenous peoples' genetic resources, plant genetic resources, flora and fauna around us, and put it at further risk and exploitation. State sovereignty cannot be asserted to an extent that derogates the sovereignty and internationally recognized rights of Indigenous peoples over our natural resources, including genetic resources. We're very concerned. What will it take to get the parties to take Indigenous rights seriously at this late stage in the negotiation of the international protocol? In the event that the states cannot take indigenous rights seriously, the Global Indigenous Caucus would reject a protocol that does not recognize or diminishes our internationally recognized rights as indigenous peoples. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Damos la palabra al señor Danilo de Jesús Lacerdas de UNICEF. Por favor, señor Lacerdas. Tiene la palabra, por favor, señor.
Incheñanto.
Tiene la palabra.
Sí. Incheñanto, Calpetón Costume Aurapinã Pataxó. Bom dia, meu nome é Aurapinã Pataxó. Tenho 15 anos e sou brasileiro. Sou da etnia Pataxó e vivo na aldeia Coroa Vermelha, no município de Santa Cruz Cabralha, no estado da Bahia. Sou adolescente promotor de cidadania. Luto com os adolescentes e jovens da minha aldeia para garantir uma vida melhor para as crianças e adolescentes indígenas. Conhecemos a nossa história e a nossa realidade. Queremos contribuir na discussão de questões que afetam as nossas vidas. Por isso, agradeço à UNICEF a oportunidade de participar do Fórum Permanente das Nações Unidas sobre Questões Indígenas. Estou aqui hoje, na sede da Organização das Nações Unidas, com representante do meu povo, para dizer o que pode ser feito para a garantia dos nossos direitos, principalmente das crianças e adolescentes. Estamos acompanhando o desenvolvimento do mundo, fazemos parte dele e queremos participar deste processo como iguais. Queremos que os governos implementem integralmente a Convenção sobre os Direitos da Criança, levando em consideração as especificidades das comunidades indígenas. Queremos ter garantido o nosso direito à terra, porque sem ela não podemos ter saúde, educação, lazer, espaços para brincar e viver. Se as terras não são demarcadas, os governos não constroem escolas, postos de saúde, praças e quadras esportivas. É da terra que tiramos o nosso alimento, os nossos rituais, construímos a nossa história. Queremos uma educação que contribua para acabar com o preconceito contra os povos indígenas. Queremos uma educação para a valorização e o respeito da nossa cultura, língua, rituais e conhecimentos tradicionais. Queremos que os livros didáticos contem a real história dos povos indígenas, de luta, de resistência contra a colonização, de massacres e de superação para a manutenção da nossa história. Os professores também precisam estar melhor capacitados e saber respeitar as diferenças. Queremos ter garantido o direito de lutar pelos nossos direitos e que a nossa luta pacífica seja respeitada. Nós continuamos perdendo nossos líderes em lutas. As nossas lideranças são nossa maior inspiração. Nós aprendemos com ele e queremos que nossa cultura e cultura continue viva. Queremos ajuda para acabar com a violência contra as crianças e adolescentes. Queremos a criação de entidades que recebam denúncias e responsabilizem as pessoas que cometeram atos de violência, como a exploração e o abuso sexual, a violência doméstica, o rapto e o tráfico de menores. Muitas crianças e adolescentes da minha aldeia precisam vender artesanatos na praia e se deixam levar por promessas de turistas e acabam sofrendo a violência. Queremos a geração de trabalho e renda para as famílias, para que não haja a necessidade de crianças e adolescentes trabalharem. Eu e os adolescentes de minha aldeia estamos fazendo a nossa parte. Estamos levando informações e conscientizando as crianças e os adolescentes em relação aos riscos que elas estão expostas. Produzindo cartazes, fazendo palestras e debates nas escolas. Passeatas pelas principais ruas do município e apresentamos peças teatrais no Centro Cultural da aldeia. Queremos que todas as crianças e adolescentes estejam atentos e se protejam dos perigos. Também conversamos com as famílias para que elas tenham mais atenção com as suas crianças. Esperamos que a nossa voz seja realmente ouvida e resulte em ações concretas. Não quero ter a lembrança de ter sido um enfeite para este evento. Nós que confiamos nas lideranças aqui presentes e na ONU. Desejamos que a nossa recomendação seja encaminhada. Parabenizo o Fórum Permanente pela abertura desse espaço de fala para os adolescentes. Me sinto honrado em participar de um evento de tamanha proporção. Muito obrigado.
Muchas gracias. Vamos a pedir al señor Scott que pueda hacer una corta intervención, sus comentarios y respuestas. Señor Scott, tiene la palabra.
In finishing, I'd just like to thank our chair and our secretary here for helping us to try and make this a flexible dialogue. And recognize Miriam Masakisa. It's nice to see a young Indigenous woman representing a government. She was instrumental in setting up the Secretariat for the Permanent Forum, and now she's representing the government of Ecuador at this meeting. With regards to the Asian Caucus, of course I'm here to... There's a long list of questions, and I'm here to have a dialogue with you. Regarding the statement from the Global Caucus, I would caution you to respect the Global Caucus of Indigenous Peoples who follow the CBD. And of course you're welcome to submit statements, position papers directly to the CBD. There would be a procedural issue if position papers were being submitted to the Permanent Forum because the members would have to adopt it by consensus and then pass it on to us. So I would just remind you that of course you're welcome to participate in the CBD, but the Global Caucus at the Permanent Forum should also respect the Global Caucus of Indigenous Peoples at the CBD and to work closely with them to ensure that you're on common ground in pursuing Indigenous rights in the ABS negotiation. I would also point out that the Member States, in fact, take Indigenous Peoples' rights very seriously, and that's why we're in a long, protracted negotiation, because it's a difficult issue to arrive at consensus on. So I wouldn't misportray them as not taking it seriously. In fact, the reason it's a long, protracted negotiation is because they're taking these matters very seriously indeed, and they're yet to arrive at consensus on this. So it's important that both bodies respect each other's processes, and also the Indigenous caucuses at both bodies should respect each other. So I would like to finish by thanking everybody in the room for ensuring that we had a dialogue this morning, and I hope that the idea of the dialogue can continue to evolve to be a flexible discussion between agencies and Indigenous peoples. Thank you.
Gracias, señor Scott. Gracias, señora López. A continuación pasaremos a examinar la parte siguiente del tema 6, el informe anual del Grupo de Apoyo Interagencial sobre Cuestiones Indígenas. Para ello invito a la señora Yamina Dacta, directora adjunta de la oficina en Nueva York de ONU Habitat. Señora Dacta, ¿puede usted acompañarlos en el podio? Doy la palabra a la señora Yamina Dacta, quien presentará el informe anual del Grupo de Apoyo Interagencial sobre Cuestiones Indígenas. Tiene usted la palabra, señora Dacta.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it working?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairperson, distinguished members of the Permanent Forum, distinguished Indigenous representatives, distinguished delegates, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, dear Ms. Elsa Stamatopoulou and team of the Secretariat of the Permanent Forum, UN Habitat, as the current co-chair of the Interagency Support Group, has the honor to address the Permanent Forum at its 9th session today to report back on the last annual meeting of the Interagency Support Group, which was held in Nairobi, Kenya, between the 28th and the 30th September 2009, on behalf of board chairs, UNEP and UN Habitat. We would like to take this opportunity to thank all colleagues who are members of the IASG, which stands for Interagency Support Group, for their continuous support and for having been able to come and be part of the last annual IASG meeting in Nairobi. It has been a pleasure and a productive learning experience to act as co-chairs this past year and to learn from colleagues throughout the UN system regarding indigenous peoples' issues. As chairs, it has been a particular delight to work closer with the Secretariat of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, its chair, and her team members. Having commonly decided to give the Nairobi meeting an African focus, which was highly supported by the IASG team, also during the preparations towards the 3 days meeting, we were particularly honored by the good representation of African Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues members who came to Nairobi on this occasion. In reflection to the official visit of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues members to UNEP and UN Habitat, both organizations would like to express their deep gratitude to the distinguished members of the forum, Ms. Margaret Lokowa, Ms. Liliane Mbele Muzangi, Mr. Hassan Id Balkasem, as well as Mr. Lars Anders Baer, for their coming to Nairobi and their relevant support and contribution throughout the IASG meeting, as well as their official visits to UNEP and UN Habitat relevant offices. The participation and preparation of our office colleagues in the Nairobi headquarters towards the IASG meetings, as well as the focused discussion of some of our offices with the members, have helped to mainstream indigenous issues in our programs, reorient certain themes and topics relevant to indigenous people in both organizations, and to improve the understanding of the topic as well. The co-chairs would like to specifically thank UNESCO, who was the outgoing chair of the IASG, for their continuous support and efforts, as well as their excellent work towards consolidating the common IASG discussion paper on development with culture and identity, which was presented on Monday this week to the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. During the first day of the IASG annual meeting last September, a panel discussion was held on the situation of indigenous people's rights in Africa. Presenters from the African Commission on Human and People's Rights introduced the challenge of defining indigenous people's issues in Africa. The Kenya National Commission on Human Rights was also invited to speak about best practices, experiences, lessons learned, and challenges concerning the implementation of indigenous people's rights in Africa. Mr. Hassan Id Belkacem, member of the Permanent Forum, gave a presentation on the progress made in recognizing the rights of indigenous people in Africa. Invited indigenous people's representatives from Kenya and the region gave a snapshot and examples over the main concern of indigenous people in Africa. It was then felt that there was a need to move from the mainstreaming of indigenous peoples' issues to a program dedicated to indigenous peoples that would bring the various agencies working on their behalf together. It was stressed that the United Nations are well placed to help indigenous peoples to engage constructively with their governments. In addition, presenters insisted on the need for significant investment in capacity building for indigenous peoples to ensure that they understand their rights, proposed programs, matters of economy, and culturally appropriate and adequate alternative livelihoods options. In the discussion, indigenous representatives raised a number of issues, in particular on land use, noting the increased commercial pressure on land and resulting evictions. Responding to the comments, the panelists agreed that the African Commission on Human and People's Rights should consider the issue of land development, in particular in Africa. Another representative endorsed the difficulties described by other representatives when dealing with indigenous peoples in Africa, in particular, identifying projects involving indigenous people when they were not recognized as such by governments. She proposed that the IASG should draw up a list of recommendations on how to identify indigenous peoples' issues in Africa and implement policies related to them based on more country-level data and consultation with indigenous peoples themselves. The constitutional and legislative protection of the rights of indigenous people was also discussed. And ILO introduced an overview report of the research project by ILO and the African Commission on Human and People's Rights on constitutional and legislative protection of the right of indigenous peoples in 24 African states. The available mechanism for indigenous people in Kenya in order to address concerns with regard to evictions, land dispossession, conflicts between nomadic communities and ranch owners, and dispossession in favor of multinational investment was also discussed. Furthermore, case studies on the indigenous people in the context of climate change, pastoralism, and security and mobility were presented by Kenyan-based indigenous peoples organizations, UN organizations, as well as non-governmental organizations. As a special invitee to the IASG annual meeting, the resident coordinator for Kenya addressed the meeting on ways to establish mechanisms for engagement and communication with indigenous peoples so that their participation in United Nations processes such as the Common Country Assessment and the United Nations Development Assistance Framework, any project formulation and implementation could be institutionalized, thereby ensuring transparency and inclusion. He also committed to provide the United Nations country team in Kenya with a special training on indigenous peoples with the support of the Permanent Forum. Following his statement, the IASG directed the following recommendation to the United Nations country team in Kenya, namely, a country-level task force on indigenous peoples' issue in Kenya, coordinated and supported by the country team, should be established to follow up the recommendation of the present report and liaise with the group and the secretariat of the Permanent Forum on the possibility of organizing a training session on indigenous peoples' issue for the country team in Kenya. We are happy to announce that the UN country team in Kenya has followed the recommendation from the IASG to the UN country team Kenya as reflected in the final report and initiated actions towards the planning of a relevant training for the team. Currently, a task force comprised by the Resident Coordinator's Office, UNDP, OHCHR, IOM, UN Habitat, and UNEP are developing an outreach strategy to already existing outcome working groups within the team, within the UN country team. The collaboration with these working groups will enhance the support and ensure the embedment of the team on indigenous people in already existing working groups to ensure a durable and sustainable approach on indigenous people's issue. The current task force was set up earlier this year, is therefore engaging the outcome working groups in the design of the training and discussion with them, have been initiated with the objective of an effective and sustainable mainstreaming of indigenous peoples' issue into the United Nations programming such as UNDAF, which is the United Nations Development Assistance Framework. The recent cases regarding indigenous peoples in Kenya include the Ondorois people from Lake Baringo, who were successful in reclaiming their land back from the government of Kenya, as well as the Ogik Elders Council of the Mau Forest, which was established a few weeks ago to collaborate with the Kenyan government and make their concerns and needs as indigenous peoples heard. These two examples show that there is not only a need to address indigenous peoples' issue in Kenya through a one-time-off training of technical staff, but to ensure the sustainability of a coordinated and well-informed, as well as participatory and transparent approach from the United Nations agencies and their partners, with particular focus on the government. In its annual meeting, the IASG engaged in a very successful dialogue and discussions and made a number of recommendations. These discussions include interagency support groups' feedback on the new structure of the in-depth dialogues and recommended to invite interested member states, United Nations country teams, as well as regional IASGs to also present their work into the in-depth dialogues. Country teams, for example, could be invited to explain the programming processes, themes, priorities, and other matters regarding indigenous issues at country level and to answer questions. This recommendation was well received by the Secretariat of the Permanent Forum and by the Permanent Forum members. Another recommendation was made by the group of the IASG is to look into the option of a communication platform to consider more effective methods of communication, information sharing, and coordination among the members of the support group. We are working on the follow-up and implementation of the recommendation. And in fact, this morning at the interagency support group meeting, we started with the technical discussion on it. It was also recommended to identify entry points, potential synergies, and opportunities to mainstream indigenous peoples' issues in country programming. For instance, activities on indigenous peoples' issues could be undertaken within the framework of existing initiatives and projects, such as programs aimed at supporting the capacity of civil society and indigenous peoples' organizations, for example, the Global Environmental Facility Small Grant Programs implemented by the UNDP or the UNDP Civil Society Democratic Governance Facilities implemented in Kenya and others. While it's clear that not all UN agencies and programs have the capacity to work on specific country-level projects, it should be possible to establish cooperation at both country and global levels. UN agencies and programs might need to join forces not only in the area of funding, but also in those of human resources and expertise. In that regard, UNDP suggested to explore setting up mechanisms such as a knowledge network to share practices among colleagues from UN agencies and other relevant partners working at the local, regional, or global levels. a knowledge network can evolve into a community of practitioners working on Indigenous peoples' issues as a platform for better communication and coordination, involving people working on and committed to the same issues, including permanent forum members. The IASG also recommended that its members collaborate with the working group of the African Commission on Human and People's Rights to further identify and explore strategies to promote the implementation of Indigenous peoples' rights in the African region. Finally, the interagency support group engaged in interesting discussions about the challenges within the United Nations, agencies, and programs in developing and implementing guidelines, strategies, or policies pertaining to Indigenous peoples. Examples were given by the World Bank and IFAD, who introduced its recently adopted policy on engagement with Indigenous peoples, as well as UN Habitat, which presented its policy guide to housing for Indigenous peoples in cities. Please do refer for the further issues and highlights brought to the support group meeting to the detailed report of the annual IASG meeting, as well as its annex, which is a compilation of all the thematic issues discussed. Both are available on the Permanent Forum website. It has been a stimulating, interesting, and very positive experience for UNEP and UN Habitat to act as the IASG co-chairs for the first time in the IASG's history. The co-chairs feel that there are mutual benefits to enhance cooperation on Indigenous peoples and will endeavor towards the development of common projects ideas at global and regional levels in the area of climate change mitigation and adaptation, in particular in the Arctic region and in the context of urban and sustainable urbanization. UNEP and UN Habitat and the entire support group are ready to stand by WHO to successfully host the next annual meeting scheduled to take place in Geneva from the 15th to the 17th September 2010. WHO is a key organization in the work on Indigenous peoples issue, and the ISG is looking forward to working on Indigenous peoples' health issues and including topics relevant to all the organization. I would like to take this opportunity on behalf of the Interagency Support Group, the Chief of the Secretariat on the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, Mrs. Elsa Stamatopoulou, for her continuous support and excellent leadership, not only in the last year, but since the existence of the Permanent Forum. It is certainly also thanks to her that the Interagency Support Group has been able to follow its ambitions over the years in the name of Indigenous peoples worldwide. I thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Gracias, señora Dacta. Expresarle los agradecimientos del Foro Permanente por el constante apoyo que recibimos de parte de la interagencial. Es muy importante para el foro el compromiso que el conjunto de las agencias, fondos y organizaciones de Naciones Unidas han adoptado a través del trabajo de ustedes en la aplicación de la Declaración de los Derechos Humanos de los Pueblos Indígenas por las Naciones Unidas, así también como el trabajo que están haciendo en la redacción de directrices referidos a los pueblos indígenas. También expresar mis agradecimientos porque el trabajo de ustedes apoya en visibilizar a los pueblos indígenas en cada uno de nuestros países y ver la posibilidad de resolver problemas y de que los pueblos indígenas sean parte del sistema de Naciones Unidas, como ya lo expresó acá el señor secretario general Ban Ki-moon. Solamente alentar a los observadores acá presentes de las organizaciones indígenas poder dirigirse al grupo interagencial de apoyo al foro permanente para que ustedes puedan sostener diálogos, reuniones y mejorar el trabajo de los equipos país en cada uno de nuestros países, porque ciertamente los pueblos indígenas tenemos muchas dificultades de acceder a los equipos país, a las distintas agencias en cualquiera de las de nuestros países. Entonces, este es un trabajo muy importante. Muchas gracias, señora Dacta, y muchas gracias, señora Cardone, por su presencia acá. Vamos a pasar al tema 4, volver al tema 4 y abriremos nuestra lista de oradores. La primera oradora de la lista será la señora Dora Tavera, de la Organización Indígena de Colombia, que es la UNIC. Señora Tavera, ¿está presente en la sala? Levante la mano, sí.
No, porque es que yo lo tengo acá.
Ah, no es. Tiene la palabra.
Pero esto se me demora mucho.
Señora Tavera, tiene la palabra.
Que me dé la posibilidad para la próxima intervención.
Por favor, me dé la oportunidad para la próxima intervención.
Joseph Marianus Cujur of the
Oraon Tribe.
The Oraon Tribe.
India.
De la India, por favor, señor Cujur. Está en sala.
Yes.
Yeah. Tiene la palabra.
Yes. Hello. Hello.
Tiene la palabra.
Yes. Mr. Chairman and distinguished indigenous representatives, let me first congratulate Mr. Carlos Mamami for being elected to the chair, and express my thanks to Madam Victoria for her efficient leadership during the last 5 years. The context of Adivasis in India today is the context of an adverse impact of economic liberalization accelerated by the process of globalization, which is marked by profound changes, acute conflicts, and new possibilities. Taken as a whole, the situation of Adivasis in India today looks like a bundle of paradoxes. The government of India does not recognize the existence of indigenous peoples in India, but we Adivasis categorically assert that we are indigenous peoples and we do exist. The constitutional category under which Adivasis, tribals, indigenous groups are enumerated is called Scheduled Tribes. More than 92% live in rural areas. Ironically, many of the Adivasis scheduled as tribes in one state are not recognized as scheduled tribes in other states within India. In some states, there are many irregularities in the census of the Adivasis. Mr. Chairman, an official database of persons displaced by projects is not available. However, some unofficial studies peg this figure at around 60 million for the period between 1947 to 2004. And of the total displaced, 40% and more are tribals. And the total percentage of people resettled is only 24%. Mr. Chairman, large-scale human rights violations, crimes and atrocities have been perpetuated against the tribals in the rural areas. These pertain to civil rights, economic rights, social rights and political rights. The most outraging part of the gross human rights violation is that there is social, cultural and physical annihilation of the tribals in the states of Chhattisgarh, Orissa, Madhya Pradesh, West Bengal and Jharkhand, despite legislations to protect them. It appears as if there is a war on people, primarily on tribals, in the name of countering the so-called terrorists or extremists. However, in the above-mentioned states, it looks as if war zones are deliberately created so that people are forced to take to arms, thereby being prone to be labeled as extremists, Maoists, and anti-development, so that they can be eliminated by the vested interests to pave the way for private companies to acquire the land inhabited by the tribals. This has proved to be one of the effective ways of dealing with the tribal resistance to the acquisition of their land and other natural resources. In Dantewada district of Chhattisgarh, more than 300 villages have become uninhabited due to the militarization of the area. In the state of Chhattisgarh, anti-Adivasi program known as Salva Judum is going on for the last few years, which ironically means peace movement. Mr. Chairman, here are a few recommendations for the UN intervention to the betterment of the tribals. That the UN bodies pressurize the government of India to recognize the existence of indigenous peoples in India. That the UN bodies do not encourage funding for the development projects that adversely impact Adivasis. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Señora Dora Tavera de la UNIC de Colombia.
¿Con eso listo? Gracias, señor presidente. Mi nombre es Dora Tavera, de la Organización Nacional Indígena de Colombia, UNIC. Este es un pronunciamiento que hacemos con las hermanas del Enlace Continental de Mujeres Indígenas, Región Sudamérica. Y quisiéramos agradecer a las entidades que aportan al Fondo de Contribuciones Voluntarias para la Participación Indígena en la ONU, que ha hecho posible nuestra participación en esta novena sesión. Expresamos nuestra preocupación sobre la situación en que se encuentran los pueblos indígenas de Sudamérica. A través de los medios de comunicación sabemos que hay persecuciones de líderes y lideresas jóvenes como expresión a la inconformidad de la violación de los derechos humanos, las concesiones otorgadas para los desarrollos de megaproyectos y explotación de recursos naturales, minerales y petroleros, atentan contra los derechos fundamentales de los pueblos indígenas para seguir asegurando la vida y la cultura. Si bien los gobiernos aprobaron la Declaración de los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, en la actualidad las autoridades gubernamentales, regionales, municipales y locales no conocen en absoluto su contenido ni sus implicancias. Mientras tanto, la violación de nuestros pueblos es sistemática, como el caso de Bagua en Perú, los asesinatos y desplazamientos en Colombia y el caso de las minerías de cielo abierto en Argentina, para citar los casos más latentes. En Colombia, durante el 2009, 114 personas indígenas fueron asesinadas, registrándose un incremento del 63% en el 2009 en comparación con el 2008. En el mismo año, la Corte Constitucional sentenció que no menos de 34 pueblos indígenas están en riesgo de desaparecer física y culturalmente. Sin embargo, para la UNIC, la cifra asciende a más de 64 pueblos, sumando los 32 pueblos con población menor de 500 habitantes, de los cuales solo dos fueron incluidos en el listado de la Corte. Cabe aclarar que las órdenes emitidas por la Corte Constitucional aún no han sido cumplidas, como el auto 004 del 2009 y el auto 092 de 2008, referido a la protección de las mujeres, en especial a las indígenas. No solo se han incumplido, sino que por el contrario, las violaciones a los derechos de los pueblos indígenas se han incrementado de forma significativa a pesar de la citada orden. Por otra parte, la Declaración de Naciones Unidas consagra en su artículo 10 el derecho a no ser desplazados de nuestras tierras y territorios. No obstante, entre el 2002 y el 2008 se registraron más de 70.000 desplazamientos individuales y colectivos de indígenas. Y en el 2009, 6.201 personas indígenas fueron expulsadas de forma violenta de los diferentes territorios ancestrales. El 80% de nuestro territorio ha sido concesionado para la implementación y desarrollo de proyectos económicos. Y en septiembre del 2009, el gobierno colombiano resolvió que los resguardos coloniales con más de 190 años de vida legal no existen.
Tanto en territorio de Amazonía como en de los Andes peruanos, hoy por hoy vienen operando empresas transnacionales de explotación de recursos mineros, madereros, petroleros y otros como la exploración de recursos acuíferos sin consulta ni consentimiento previo, libre e informado de los pueblos indígenas. Por el contrario, vienen transgrediendo a la unidad comunitaria organizativa. Las políticas públicas y programas estatales en general son impuestas de arriba y hacia abajo, sin tener en cuenta las demandas ni propuestas de las mujeres, jóvenes y pueblos indígenas. En este sentido, para las mujeres indígenas como para las nuevas generaciones, es un desafío lograr el cumplimiento pleno de los derechos esenciales como a una educación de calidad, intercultural e inclusiva, a una salud con respeto a la cosmovisión propia y a la afirmación de identidad cultural libre de discriminación. En Argentina, por ejemplo, los avances y compromisos quedan solo en los discursos más que en la acción. Los pueblos indígenas en ese país viven con un alto riesgo por ser indígenas, viviendo permanentemente en estados disociativos al derecho humano y perdiendo su vida por la defensa de las tierras y los territorios. Día a día los conflictos se van agudizando mientras el modelo neoliberal y globalizado impera en el país. Por lo tanto, exhortamos a los estados a respetar y ser coherentes con la Declaración de los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas y al Convenio 169, implementando políticas apropiadas y con presupuestos específicos. Armonizar las leyes nacionales con las leyes internacionales, siendo la declaración el marco base. Fortalecer iniciativas de programas de formación para jóvenes en temas de desarrollo con identidad, fortalecimiento y afirmación de identidad cultural. Tomar en cuenta las demandas y propuestas planteadas desde los pueblos indígenas y bajo mecanismos de participación efectiva que garanticen la representación amplia y democrática en espacios de decisión. Reconocer y proteger los derechos de los pueblos indígenas a sus tierras ancestrales y establecer los mecanismos de consulta de acuerdo a las obligaciones del Estado en el marco del Convenio 169 de la OIT, necesarios para que tales derechos puedan ser ejercidos con plena participación de los pueblos indígenas. Y teniendo en cuenta que numerosos pueblos indígenas del mundo se encuentran en riesgo de ser extinguidos física y culturalmente y que muchos han desaparecido, que el foro permanente estudie la posibilidad de dedicar un tema especial a ese asunto en uno de sus futuros periodos de sesiones. Finalmente, hermano presidente, hacemos voto para que los estados y las entidades responsables avancen progresivamente en el reconocimiento y respeto de los derechos humanos de los pueblos indígenas en los niveles nacionales e internacionales, legislando e implementando los compromisos adoptados a nivel internacional. Muchísimas gracias.
En nuestra lista es el señor Rodney Dillon, que hablará en nombre de varias organizaciones indígenas del mundo. Señor Dillon, está en la sala, tiene la palabra. ¿Puede levantar la mano, señor Dillon? No está. Entonces vamos a dar la palabra al señor Salomón Aguanach, de la Asociación Indígena Interétnica de Desarrollo de la Selva Peruana, AIDICEP. Señor Aguanach, tiene la palabra. ¿Puede levantar la mano, señor Aguanach? Tiene la palabra.
Distinguidos miembros del Foro Permanente, en representación de la Asociación Interétnica de Desarrollo de la Amazonía Selva Peruana, AIDICEP, en ocasión al nivel de cumplimiento e implementación del derecho al desarrollo y la libre determinación señalados en los artículos 3 y 32 de la Declaración de Naciones Unidas sobre Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, deseamos expresar lo siguiente. 1. La Defensoría del Pueblo, en su reporte anual de conflictos sociales, señala que en el Perú existen 252 conflictos, de los cuales el 40% son conflictos socioambientales. Una gran mayoría de estos se originan debido a la superposición de actividades extractivas en territorios de los pueblos indígenas, superposición que no consideró, entre otros, cumplimiento de los derechos a la consulta previa, libre e informada, ni a poder decidir nuestras prioridades de desarrollo. Esta realidad se evidenció en los lamentables hechos de Bagua el 5 de junio de 2009. 2. Luego de 15 años de vigencia en el Perú del Convenio 169 de la OIT, y más de 2 años de la Declaración de Naciones Unidas sobre Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, el Estado peruano no ha cumplido con la implementación adecuada de estos instrumentos internacionales. Al respecto, son nulas o pocas las políticas en materia de pueblos indígenas que contemplen el derecho a la consulta, el respeto de la identidad cultural, libre determinación y desarrollo con identidad en las etapas de discusión y diseño de políticas para el desarrollo amazónico. 3. En el Perú, el desarrollo de la Amazonía peruana ha estado marcado por una tendencia de concesiones para actividades extractivas. Ejemplo de ello es el que el 75% de nuestra Amazonía se encuentra lotizada para actividades hidrocarburos. En la mayoría de los casos, estos lotes se hallan sobre el territorio de los pueblos indígenas, la cual genera violaciones a nuestros derechos fundamentales. 4. En el Perú, el derecho a la consulta, asociado con nuestro derecho al desarrollo y la libre determinación, se encuentra en una fase de discusión legislativa. Al respecto, es importante asegurar que la propuesta de las organizaciones andinas amazónicas sea tomada en cuenta por el Congreso de la República y que con ello se logre la implementación de nuestro derecho a ser consultados. Así se asegura como mínimo lo señalado en el Convenio 169 de la OIT y de la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas. Por ello, en ningún caso puede pretender legislar por debajo de estos estándares, como viene aconteciendo en la discusión en la Comisión de Constitución y Reglamento del Congreso de la República. 5. En este proceso es vital que el Estado peruano asegure prontamente y con participación de nosotros los pueblos una verdadera institucionalidad en materia de pueblos indígenas. Conseguirlo ayudará a implementar políticas públicas inclusivas con un enfoque de desarrollo con identidad y de respeto de los derechos de nuestros pueblos. 6. Exhortamos al Estado peruano a hacer los esfuerzos necesarios para evitar y asegurar presencia de los miembros del Foro Permanente en Cuestiones Indígenas a realizar una visita oficial al Perú, tal como lo han hecho los estados de Bolivia y Paraguay. Ello ayudará a evaluar el cumplimiento de derechos de pueblos indígenas en el Perú y generar mejores canales de diálogo entre el Estado y nosotros los pueblos indígenas. Es por ello, y por intermedio de los distinguidos miembros del Foro Permanente de la Comunidad Internacional, que reafirmamos nuestro compromiso con el desarrollo, respeto del medio ambiente y nuestra disposición al diálogo basado a buena fe. En ese sentido, exhortamos al Estado peruano a implementar prontamente y en participación y consulta con los pueblos indígenas políticas y aseguren el vigencia y promoción de nuestra identidad cultural, desarrollo y respeto de nuestra libre determinación. Muchas gracias, señor presidente.
Señor, daremos paso a la lista de oradores de representantes de gobierno, igualmente siempre rogándoles que nos entiendan en la administración del tiempo. Daremos la palabra a la señora Gabriela Garduño de México. La señora Garduño tiene la palabra.
Muchas gracias. Señor presidente, el Gobierno de México tiene el pleno compromiso de impulsar el ejercicio de los derechos plasmados en la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas en la vida cotidiana de su población. Dentro del Programa para el Desarrollo de los Pueblos Indígenas 2009-2012, mencionado en mi anterior participación, el eje 1, relativo a derechos indígenas, busca promover, en términos de las disposiciones aplicables, la armonización del marco jurídico en materia de derechos indígenas y generar condiciones para el respeto y ejercicio pleno de estos derechos. El Programa Nacional de Derechos Humanos 2008-2012 también contiene diversas acciones para promover de manera transversal el ejercicio de los derechos de los pueblos indígenas, entre ellos consolidar el cumplimiento de los instrumentos internacionales que consagran derechos a favor de estos, prevenir su discriminación en el ámbito laboral y educativo y promover el respeto de su diversidad cultural. Tras la adopción de la declaración en México, se han llevado a cabo diversas acciones que buscan su más amplia difusión. A través del sistema de radiodifusoras culturales indigenistas de la Comisión Nacional para el Desarrollo de los Pueblos Indígenas, CDI, se transmiten cápsulas informativas sobre su contenido. Se publicó una edición de bolsillo de la declaración en español que fue distribuida entre servidores públicos y miembros de los pueblos indígenas. Se tradujo la declaración a 18 lenguas indígenas en un esfuerzo coordinado con las oficinas del Programa de Naciones Unidas para el Desarrollo, del Centro de Información de Naciones Unidas y del Alto Comisionado de las Naciones Unidas para los Derechos Humanos, así como del Fondo Indígena. Estas traducciones están siendo dadas a conocer por diversos medios y pueden encontrarse en los portales de Internet de los participantes en el proyecto. En estrecha cooperación con el PNUD, se han combinado la distribución de las traducciones de la declaración con talleres de capacitación dirigidos a los pueblos y comunidades indígenas de mi país. De este modo, durante la presentación del primer informe sobre la situación de los pueblos indígenas del mundo en México el pasado 14 de enero, el Gobierno de México destacó la importancia de la implementación de la declaración y apuntó que la consulta y la participación de los pueblos y comunidades indígenas deben ser los ejes que definan su propio desarrollo, tal y como se establece en los artículos 18 y 19. Asimismo, se exhibió el cortometraje El Camino de Sabina como un esfuerzo conjunto para promocionar los derechos de los pueblos indígenas en el marco de esta declaración. Otros medios innovadores se han encontrado para llegar a un número mayor de comunidades indígenas, entre ellos la producción de papel en el que se envuelven las tortillas al comprarlas. En él se puede leer en lengua maya y en español los derechos de las mujeres indígenas. En la sala encontrarán ejemplares de este papel y una explicación más detallada del proyecto. En síntesis, podemos decir que en México estamos convencidos sobre la necesidad de que las comunidades y pueblos indígenas conozcan sus derechos como paso necesario para que puedan ejercerlos plenamente. Señor Presidente, el artículo 7 de la declaración reconoce que las personas indígenas tienen derecho a la vida, a la integridad física y mental, la libertad y la seguridad, así como a ser protegidos de todo tipo de violencia. Una de las nuevas formas de violencia que afecta a nuestra sociedad es la trata de personas. El pasado 14 de abril, a invitación de la Oficina de Naciones Unidas contra la Droga y el Delito, México se constituyó en la plataforma para el lanzamiento para América Latina de la campaña Corazón Azul contra la Trata de Personas. Este delito es concebido como una forma moderna de esclavitud que comprende la captación, el transporte, el traslado, la recepción de personas, recurriendo al uso de la fuerza u otras formas de coacción. Dicha explotación tendrá por objetivo las diferentes formas de explotación sexual, los trabajos o servicios forzados, la esclavitud o las prácticas análogas a esta y la servidumbre. Los pueblos indígenas son especialmente vulnerables a las diferentes formas del delito de trata. Por ello, el Gobierno de México trabajará entre 2010 y 2011 con sus 62 pueblos indígenas a fin de dar a conocer la existencia de este delito, sus formas de prevención y denuncia a través de acciones de difusión masiva con materiales adaptados a su realidad, en sus lenguas, con sus métodos y en sus comunidades. Señor presidente, los derechos plasmados en la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas marcan la tendencia internacional en la materia y guían a los estados en la armonización de su marco jurídico respectivo, así como en el diseño y ejecución de políticas públicas que conduzcan a su aplicación plena. En México seguiremos trabajando para avanzar en este objetivo. Muchas gracias.
Gracias a usted, señora Garduño. Nuestra próxima oradora de la lista es la señora Connie Taracena, de la Misión Permanente de Guatemala en Naciones Unidas. Señora Taracena, tiene usted la palabra. Tiene la palabra, señora.
Gracias, señor presidente. Este sobre el tema 4, y nos hubiera gustado haber hecho esta declaración cuando el relator especial estaba en sala. Sin embargo, es para mi delegación un motivo de orgullo ver a alguien de la región presidir la novena sesión del foro. Le deseo éxitos en su gestión y cuente con el apoyo de Guatemala para el buen desarrollo de la agenda que hemos aprobado. Saludo que también hago extensivo a los demás miembros del foro. Aprovechamos para esta oportunidad para agradecer la excelente labor desarrollada por Vicky Tauli Corpus en el desempeño de la función de presidenta en los 5 foros anteriores. Mi gobierno reitera su convicción de lograr el goce de la plena realización de los derechos humanos y libertades fundamentales por los pueblos indígenas. Es indispensable para eliminar el racismo, la discriminación y todas las formas de intolerancia. Reitera su determinación de promover condiciones de igualdad de los derechos civiles, políticos, económicos, sociales y culturales, con pleno respeto de sus características distintivas y de su propia iniciativa, de manera que puedan expresar libremente su propia identidad y ser parte inherente de la vida comunitaria como nación. Reconocemos la impostergable necesidad de tomar medidas para luchar contra la persistencia de la discriminación racial, social y cultural. Estamos conscientes del valor y la diversidad cultural que los pueblos indígenas aportan al patrimonio universal de la humanidad y reconocemos que su activa participación en toda sociedad es fundamental para consolidar la estabilidad política y social de los estados que habitan. Nos acompaña aquí el comisionado presidencial por la lucha contra el racismo y la discriminación racial, el doctor Ruperto Montejo. Deseamos felicitar al foro por haber escogido como tema de esta sesión el desarrollo con cultura e identidad, tema de la reunión de trabajo realizada en enero de este mismo año, el cual aporta la visión particular de su mundo y su interpretación y aplicación de un modo de desarrollo económico que respete la integridad cultural, política, social, ecológica y económica de los pueblos indígenas y sus comunidades. Con arreglo al Estado de Derecho, mi gobierno favorece el desarrollo de la cultura e identidad de los pueblos indígenas y en los últimos 5 años se han abordado 14 acciones en el marco de políticas públicas, planes, proyectos y acciones entre las que destacamos. La promoción de programas de inversión social con pertinencia étnico-cultural que favorezca la igualdad de oportunidades. B. Fortalecimiento de los mecanismos de participación previstos en la Ley de Descentralización y en la Ley y el Reglamento de los Consejos de Desarrollo Urbano y Rural.
Carlos Mamani.
C. Divulgación y fomento de las tradiciones y costumbres culturales de los pueblos indígenas y fortalecimiento de la educación bilingüe y promoción de legislación para erradicar la discriminación. D. Valoración e incorporación de las prácticas medicinales de los pueblos indígenas en los servicios estatales de salud. E. Evaluación de políticas estratégicas, programas y planes de desarrollo rural relacionados con la pobreza para asegurar su pertinencia étnico-cultural y de género en los mismos. También nos acompaña la defensora de la Defensoría de la Mujer Indígena, Cleotilde Cucaal. Reiteramos el apoyo decidido a las políticas públicas para la convivencia y eliminación del racismo y la discriminación racial. Esta política representa el esfuerzo colectivo de instituciones públicas y sociales, de cientistas sociales, activistas y ciudadanía organizada, preocupados por erradicar el problema del racismo, convencidos de que la sociedad y el Estado guatemaltecos pueden transitar de una realidad de exclusión y discriminación a otra caracterizada por el pluralismo y la democracia. Adicionalmente, están pendientes de aprobación en el Congreso las siguientes iniciativas de ley: la Ley de Lugares Sagrados de los Pueblos Mayas, la Ley de Consulta a los Pueblos Indígenas, la Ley de Radios Comunitarias, la Ley General sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, la Ley del Programa Nacional de Resarcimiento y la Ley de Generalización de la Educación Bilingüe, Multicultural e Intercultural. Durante los dos últimos gobiernos se fortaleció la función de la Coordinadora Interinstitucional Indígena del Estado, espacio que aglutina a los mecanismos indígenas. Este año el gobierno presentó información sobre el seguimiento de las recomendaciones de las sesiones del octavo foro permanente para las cuestiones indígenas, documento E/C19/210/12/Adendum 8. En donde hay más información detallada sobre la situación de los pueblos indígenas en Guatemala. Señor, para concluir, señor presidente, mi delegación desea reafirmar su respaldo y apoyo al Foro Permanente para Cuestiones Indígenas para cumplir con los objetivos que se han trazado y las metas de desarrollo del milenio. Al relator especial sobre la situación de los derechos y las libertades fundamentales de los pueblos indígenas, quien está invitado para visitar el país en el próximo mes de junio, y a la aplicación de la Declaración sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. Muchas gracias.
Gracias por sus palabras, señora. El próximo orador de nuestra lista es el señor Arfin Saleh, de la Alianza Mayaskar de Indonesia. Señor Saleh, tiene la palabra. Tiene la palabra, señor.
Thank you, Chairperson. This statement is endorsed by 26 organizations. Chairperson, I would like to use this opportunity to draw your attention to the situation of indigenous people in my homeland, North Sumatra, in Maroke, West Papua. In my homeland, there was an arrest last year, and there has been a continued threat of arrest of indigenous leader for defending our land and territory by police and the state plantation too. In West Papua, especially Maroke, related to the development of Maroke Integrated Food and Energy Estate, or MAFI. MAFI is a project designed to develop an integrated food production covering agriculture, horticulture, and livestock in 1.6 million hectares of lowland, forest, and swamp. This program falls under Law No. 41-10-2009 on the protection of area for sustainable food agriculture, based on Presidential Instruction No. 1-2010 and the acceleration of the development corridor of Maroke. This project will soon be implemented. There have been 30 private companies investing in this program. Meanwhile, this food industry is estimated to bring 6.4 million workers to Maroke in West Papua in general. The total population of West Papua in only 4.6 million people, where 2.2 million of this population are indigenous and 70% left in remote area. With a population of only 174,000 in Maroke, this plan will acutely threaten the existence of indigenous people within this area, turning them into a minority in number, even leading to extinction in the future. This is, as we may say, structural and systematic genocide. It is unacceptable. Therefore, we request the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues to 1. Urge urge the government of Indonesia of, excuse me, one, urge the government of Indonesia and other relevant UN state members not to relocate indigenous people in the establishment of public or private business interest project on indigenous land and territories. Two, conduct an independent study on the impact of MIFI and other similar business to indigenous people in Morocco and around the world. We request the UN Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights and fundamental freedom of indigenous people to conduct a thematic study on deployment project including MIFI and their impact on cultural integrity and the human rights situation of indigenous people. We also urge the government of Indonesia to invite the UN Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights and fundamental freedom of indigenous people and the UN Special Rapporteur on the rights to food to visit and to make a report concerning the situation of indigenous people in Morocco and West Papua in general, affected by MIFI and other business development. I will submit the written statement in after this. Thank you, Chairperson.
Gracias a usted. Nuestra próxima oradora de la lista es la señora Ida Nikolaisen de el Grupo Internacional de Trabajo en Asuntos Indígenas. Señora Nikolaisen, tiene la palabra. Señora Nikolaisen, ¿está en sala? No está en sala. Señor Alexander Konstantinov, de la Asociación de Pueblos Indígenas del Norte, Siberia y Lejano Oeste de la Federación Rusa. Señor Konstantinov, ¿está en sala? Por favor, levante la mano. Señor Ronald Waromi del West Papua, del Pacífico, ¿está señor Waromi? Tiene usted la palabra.
Distinguished Chairperson of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, members of Permanent Forum, Indigenous brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to present the statement of West Papua Indigenous people. Before I present the statement in this very important event, allow me to express my feeling of pride and happiness in attending the ninth session of the UNPFII. I want also expressing my gratitude to the Secretariat of the UNPFII, who worked very hard to host this event, and I would like to thank you, the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, with the UN Voluntary Fund for Indigenous Population. We West Papua Indigenous people continue to suffer discrimination, marginalization, extreme poverty, conflict, and human rights abuses. We face dispossession of our traditional land and livelihood, displacement, destruction of our belief system, culture, identity, language, race, and way of life under the threat of extinction. Over 47 years, since 1963, our human rights and fundamental freedom in West Papua have never been fully guaranteed. This has been impeding the economic and social development of indigenous people in West Papua. The present Bill of Law of the Republic of Indonesia, number 21 of the year 2001 on the special autonomy to Papua, does not guarantee fully the freedom of expression of West Papuan rights and fundamental freedom that are protected by international instruments. In the era of the special autonomy, amidst various humanitarian problems, although the special autonomy was granted as a mean and solution to improve the life of indigenous people in West Papua, the human rights violations have increased, health problems have not been taken off, education, infrastructure, and welfare problems persist and increasingly deteriorate. Indigenous people of West Papua have no freedom of expression and have been arrested and suffer of sickness in prison. West Papua returners from Papua New Guinea that under the protection of UNHCR after return home, did not obtain serious attention from Indonesian government for almost 10 years to become self-support since the year 2000, causing many refugees' families died of hunger and illness. The indigenous people of West Papua in Timika were in scared situation after 16 December 2009, Kelly Kwalik, the Free Papua Movement, Organisasi Papua Merdeka leader, was shot dead by Indonesian police in Timika, West Papua, near to Tembagapura, the PT Freeport Indonesia gold and copper mining. Through the 9th session of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, we request the UN agency to support indigenous people organizations to carry out the activities in promoting and protecting the culture and language which is part of indigenous people identity. We request to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees to assist West Papua refugees that voluntary repatriation to Indonesia from Papua New Guinea refugees camp. We, West Papua indigenous people, demand peace and justice. West Papua indigenous people call upon the United Nations for the realization of the provision contained in Article 3 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, which state that indigenous people have the right to self-determination and the right to freely determine their political status. Self-determination will enable to end the conflict and human rights violation in West Papua, and self-determination will enable indigenous people in West Papua to reach the Millennium Development Goals. Thank you very much.
Acabamos de escuchar al último orador de mi lista de esta mañana. La semana próxima el foro permanente seguirá con su programa de trabajo que figura en el documento E/C.19/2010L.1. Las sesiones del foro permanente tendrán lugar en la sala de conferencias 1 NLB del nuevo edificio de la sede de Naciones Unidas en el Jardín del Norte. La Secretaría tiene anuncios importantes que hacer. Por favor, tiene la palabra.
Thank you. I have three very quick announcements. The first is the security informs the participants that no special passes are going to be needed for non-governmental organizations for next week. So they can access the North Lawn building with their regular passes. Also, there is a closed meeting of the forum that will start at 3 o'clock. Please check in the UN journal. It indicates the room. Also, that today from 12 o'clock to 6 p.m., the Indigenous Craft Fair is happening in the church building on the 8th floor. And last but not least, on the occasion of the 9th session of the forum, there will be a special event honoring our esteemed member of the forum, Ms. Tonya Gonella Frischner, the North American representative to the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. There will be a buffet reception on Sunday, 25th April, at 2 o'clock, and it will last until 7 in the evening, honoring Ms. Gonella Tonya Frischner, and everybody is invited. Thank you.
Se levanta la sesión.